Blog Talk Radio.
I am dominating at my fingertips.
And you're listening to Hell in a Cell Radio.
The Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen,
hello and welcome to another edition of Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. I am the host, the Dean of Credibility, Double D, and you can find me at Folsom County. Today is October 30th, 2013, and we are going to have a few great guests. Kicking things off will be Tony Givens. He'll be coming up about 20 minutes from now. 20 minutes in, you will have Tony Givens, and Craven Vera will be on 90 minutes into the program. With me, as always, is the above-average comedian, Dan the Man Calachico. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing wonderful now. We're doing the show. I can hide in my little world, and I'm doing great. And you can find me on Twitter at DanLaw83.
And Obey the Puck Show. Obey Puck Show.
Obey Puck Show. Yes, I don't know why I forget. Obey Puck Show. Follow us on Twitter every Monday night at 9. We had a caller at the first. It's a slow climb to the top, as I say.
And with me to my right is, of course, our MMA and wrestling analyst, Omega Squad, Chris Green. Chris, how are you doing tonight?
He's very quiet today.
Happy Halloween.
We're going to have to fix the volume issue that you're currently experiencing. You went from too high to too low.
Too loud, too low, what?
Now it's too
loud. You
low.
Sound like you're in the other room going, hey, guys.
Good Lord.
Hi.
Nothing works.
Right there.
I'm practically eating the microphone. So
that's okay. Eat it good. Eat it. Where can they follow you, Chris?
They can follow me at Omega Squad.
I'll be the happy one.
If they really want to. You know, most interesting thing, but
it's good to know that I'm on the left, though.
You're on the left?
Yeah, you're on the right. You're two deans right.
Guys, I wanted to start off, of course, this week, 2K Sports released WWE 2K14. Now, did you guys have any experience with this quite yet?
The new one or in general the series?
The new one.
No, I have not. No, I haven't been able to get it yet.
Well, do you know anything about it? Is there anything you'd like to ask me about the game?
I would like to know how the WrestleMania, 30 years of WrestleMania segment. That's the wrong. The mode works.
Yes, mode.
Thank
mode,
you.
Dan.
Mode.
The mode is probably my favorite part of the game right now.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big WrestleMania fanatic, as you know, if you've listened to the show, I collect the WrestleMania DVDs and everything. So going back and living through those moments, even if they're not the most representative moments, in some cases, WrestleMania 1, of course, does not have, probably because they can't get Mr. T to sign the dotted line for his likeness. The main event of WrestleMania 1 is not on there. But you do get Big John Studd against Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
And it plays out just like that match. You know, your objective is to body slam him within 6 minutes, which is actually what happened. So,
wow.
Yeah, so I can't complain there. But I've made it up to WrestleMania 12. And I've stopped on my... Well, I stopped on my own accord. Well, it's only one match, usually. Sometimes
two. You know, you're moving your ass, man.
Well, one match, sometimes two. Like WrestleMania. Well, I don't want to give away WrestleMania 9.
Can I ask a stupid question?
Sure.
So
no,
do you play?
Go ahead.
How does the mode work specifically?
Well, did you ever play the WrestleMania game? I forget the name of it. It came out a few years ago.
No.
Legends of WrestleMania.
No, I never did.
Well, it's very similar to that for those who have played it for our listeners.
So you can't give me a rundown of how the mode works.
There's different objectives.
For ignorant listeners such as myself.
Well, there's different objectives you have to complete before you unlock everything. There's one main objective you have to complete, and that's usually win by pinfall, win by submission, that sort of thing. And you can continue on. You'll unlock the next WrestleMania. However, if you want to unlock that chapter with the different things, like WrestleMania 1, when you body slam Big John Studd, when you complete all the objectives for that, you'll unlock not only WrestleMania 2, but you'll also unlock the arena for WrestleMania.
Oh, nice.
You unlock Andre the Giant. You unlock Big John Studd and Bobby the Brain Heenan. So each thing, like WrestleMania 6, I did not complete all of the objectives because apparently there's a WrestleMania moment that I missed. Not sure what the WrestleMania moment was that I missed because it came after the power slam. I guess probably the kick out for Hogan to kick out and then he misses the leg drop, you splash and win. I'm thinking that's the moment I missed, but go ahead with yours.
Well, so is it like you play one specific match from WrestleMania, from that WrestleMania?
Typically, sometimes two. WrestleMania 3 had two. Hogan and Andre and Steamboat and Savage.
So it's not like you're going through, like, the whole card and recreating the whole card.
No.
Yeah.
God, no, no. A representative match.
Okay.
From WrestleMania. So, typically, like later WrestleManias, there's more because there's some of the current roster is on there.
Right, right, right.
So as you get closer and closer, like you'll have Flair against Shawn Michaels and that sort of thing. But joining us right now, I don't have his music queued up, is Harry Barnett. And Harry knows a lot about WrestleMania. And the
I was about to say, I know a lot about WrestleMania. I mean, I haven't watched.
We were talking about the road to WrestleMania, or whatever the mode's called. I forget. 30 years of WrestleMania. We were talking.
Ah, yeah.
But like I said, you have to complete the objectives, and once you complete them, you unlock different things in said in the mode. Like what I was saying about WrestleMania 6, I did not complete all the objectives, so I do not have the Ultimate Warrior unlocked quite yet, but I could move on. So I do have Bret Hart and Yokozuna unlocked.
I will say one thing. I do prefer the variation that you've got of having the different WrestleManias as opposed to just having the Attitude Era mode like last year.
See, I didn't play last year. I skipped last year. I don't know why. But I never picked up 13, so I don't know what the Attitude Era thing is exactly.
Yeah, you didn't miss much.
But I enjoy this. Now, the beat the streak mode or live the streak or whatever, you know, keep it alive, survive the streak, whatever it's called. The beat the streak thing is so darn hard because Undertaker just reverses everything and hits you with a finisher and you're dead. I tried with Bundy. I tried with Zack Ryder, because I thought that would be fun. It didn't turn out too well for me. But
tell me, Dean, have you tried with a created character yet? Because I think I know someone that can do it.
Yeah, the American Fatneck, maybe.
Roughneck!
Oh, no.
Shut up, you Brit.
But no, I'm thinking of using Brock, because Brock is such a beast in this game. So I'm thinking with Brock, once I hit the F5, I'll be able to beat the streak. And I have read different forums online that have said Brock Lesnar is your best bet to kill the streak.
I bet Goldberg.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Well, you can unlock Goldberg.
I know, but I think you like him so much.
I don't mind using him as a video game character, Dan. It's kind of like Cena. I like using Cena as a video game character because he's unstoppable.
Can you play Undertaker versus Undertaker?
I suppose you could. Why would you want to, though?
No, I'm saying because because there's every wrestling game that's been out there, you can put wrestlers against each other. It never made any sense why once you picked one wrestler, you didn't, you couldn't pick him for the opponent.
Yeah, that's the thing about last year. You could do three different Triple H's all against each other. You had Hunter Hearst Helmsley against DX, Triple H against Triple H now.
That sounds enthralling.
As long as they're not giving promos, I'm okay with that.
Maybe three different promos, though.
I don't know. But I really like the game. The universe mode, there's a lot of... you can customize a lot with it.
It'll all be based on the controls for me because I had such... I was telling you in private, I had such a problem with the controls for the last...
Fingers too fat, Dan.
Yeah, fingers too fat, moron. Anyway, I'm going to go for the fat joke, everyone.
No, just the fingers.
The controls were so stupid, you bald idiot, that I got tired of it. And why is he here, Dean?
Because I enjoy his company. Go
God!
Ahead, Dan. Dan, just move on.
That's it. The controls pissed me off so much I just stopped. I didn't even buy the last one. I skipped 13.
What is it with the controls? I'm not sure if I follow.
They had a set of controls for years that were fine. Like, you had a grappling system and a punch-kick system, and they completely revamped it when they went to the 12, like, the number, when they went from Raw versus SmackDown to the number thing.
Okay.
They came up with a completely new control system that was the pit.
Yeah, but they reboot it every few years. That's the thing. And, yeah, some people can't have, well... Even I couldn't handle it for a little while.
No, it's fine. I couldn't handle it. I agree with him. It sucked. I could not figure out.
You get used to it, Dan.
Yeah, once you start playing, I'm not sure if that's a really valid complaint, Dan.
Yeah, Dan.
I didn't ask. You asked me a question.
I actually didn't ask a question. You asked me about the controls, and I was offering that. And
well, you asked
you
why.
You offered your opinion.
No, you asked why the controls were a problem. That's the answer. I didn't know. I didn't care if it was valid. That was just my answer.
Right, Nick.
Fat Nick.
No, I meant Dan, not that guy.
Oh. Well, Fat Nick. But well, Harry, what have you heard about? You're waiting until Friday before England gets the game. So, are you looking forward to it? Have you been reading the reviews, seeing what's going on with it?
I've been watching a few YouTube videos today, and I'm going to say I didn't expect much. You know, with the THQ sale, I thought, you know what, this game's probably just going to be WWE 13.2 or something like that. But it actually looks pretty good. You know, the new roster, like you said, Universe Mode has been improved. I'm looking forward to it.
It's fun. You know, when it comes to a game like this, is it fun? I think there's enough of diversion. Once you get tired of the universe mode, frankly, I can have Daniel Bryan come out for every match just and watch his entrance because I love the entrance that they put in there for him. They have the crowd going yes, 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 and he's going no.
I've seen that.
Yeah, it's back when he was. I guess they created it when he was. Against the yeses and he was doing the no. So it's fun, you know. I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, there's a few things that bug me, like Andre the Giant wore blue in the first WrestleMania. His trunks were blue, but they're black in the game. So that really bugged me, things like that.
And if you get bored anytime soon, I was discussing this with Damian Dragon. You can just go straight for the create a wrestler and all that sort of stuff. And there's so much that you can create from wrestlers to arenas to stories, all that sort of stuff. There's just so much out there that you can.
Well, see, me, I'd rather just go to the community creations and download.
Oh, that's lazy. This thing.
It is lazy, but it works for me, Harry. It works for me. So. Definitely, I suggest people go out and get it. Dan, go out and get it. We'll wrestle online. Have a good time.
I plan on it, actually.
We'll have a good time. Do you still have Left 4 Dead?
I don't.
You suck.
I'm sorry.
Do you have Arkham Origins yet?
I don't. I have the other two Arkham.
You see, Harry,
I have a life. I can't just buy video games, sit inside, and play them all day.
So do I. I just spent an entire day
really,
playing
them. All I see on Twitter is how you've been playing the game all damn day.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Nothing.
I'm just saying I don't.
I'm saying I don't. I wouldn't say there's a problem with it.
You were inferring that there was a problem by him being online all day.
I did not mean to do that. I didn't. I actually envy you.
It was the inference, Dan.
It was. I didn't infer anything.
Hey, all three of you can go to hell. I have kids, so
I never get to play video games.
Hey, and he's perfectly volumed.
Yes.
Wow.
You know what? This is going to be good.
It will be. I think we worked out the kinks. Harry, thank you so much for joining us. I do have to bid adieu. You can stick around, but just shut up because I don't hear you.
Shut up.
I don't want to hear you breathe. I don't want to hear your cat. I don't want to hear anything. I don't want to hear the old lady next door complaining about the cat.
Why did that happen?
Right now, what I'm going to do, I will say good day anyway. Oh, well, good day. Yeah, well, good night, actually, because what time is it over there? Like 3 o'clock? What?
1 a.m., Dean.
It's only 1 a.m.?
Yeah.
That's early for him.
Huh. 1 a.m.?
That's not too bad.
Yeah, 1 a.m., that's not bad at all. But what I'm going to do is go ahead and play a Mystery Men song. I asked El Diablo on Friday night, what song is the perfect representation of the Mystery Men sound? And it is This Is How the Magic Happens by the Mystery Men. We'll be right back after this.
We'll be right back.
right, and that was the Mystery Men with This Is How the Magic Happens. Check them out at lucha-rock.com, and they also have a Bandcamp at lucharock.bandcamp.com. And now my guest at this time, well, our guest at this time, is Tony Gibbons. He's, of course, the promoter of NWA Smoky Mountain, and you could call that the crown jewel of the NWA affiliates. They consistently draw well. They consistently have great shows. Not only that, he is also the man behind You Are Not Getting Booked, that fabulous Facebook page that has taken the independent wrestling community by storm. Now, Dan, have you ever had a chance to take a look at You Are Not Getting Booked?
The Facebook I have page? Not had a chance to look at that yet.
Well,
I
mark
have
my
been,
words, Dan.
I have
a fantastic site for those that may have seen it.
I have been enthralled. I meant to, but I have quite frankly been enthralled with the NWA Smoky Mountain that he does.
Well, tell me a little bit about NWA Smoky Mountain. What have you seen?
I have been completely been shocked. You know, I've heard it about it through you and to the fact that we're booking him for the show. And I started watching the episode the last couple days. First of all, the production is top-notch. For a little independent, I don't want to say a little independent show. It's kind of like a big independent show. They will draw thousands of people in these great looking places. There's so many people coming to the show, and the talent, the in ring performance is fantastic. And then you got it under the NWA banner, and you know we've talked about before how the NWA banner sometimes people don't think it means something. It kind of adds something to it.
I could certainly agree. Now, talking about that production value and everything, he wants to make things look better. So he started a Kickstarter. We're going to get him on right after this. And, Dan, this should sound familiar to you. And our guest right now is the promoter for NWA Smoky Mountain, the man behind You Are Not Getting Booked. It is Mr. Tony Gibbons. Mr. Gibbons, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We are doing well. My first question, I wanted to know how you broke into this business, because it looks like you started out as a wrestler, and then somewhere along the line in 2004, it looks like, you started a promotion. But how did you break into this wrestling business?
All right, believe it or not, I broke in because I was a fan who would go to shows, and I would curse and yell and everything, and I kept on getting kicked out of shows. And when I was about 16 years old, the promoter that kicked me out all the time at the shows I went to actually invited me to come after a show and talk to him and everything. And one thing led to another. I ended up being a ring announcer, putting up the ring, everything. When I was 17 in 2000, I started wrestling. And actually, my first run at promoting was in 2002, and it was an epic failure. I was only like a 19. I tried running a couple of shows. But then a couple of years later, I had the opportunity to promote again, and we promoted. We started our television show here locally in 2004, and the rest is history. I've promoted consistently, on a regular basis since that time.
Oh, sorry, I was on mute. I'm here. I'm back. So how long did it take for you to get in the ring and start actually wrestling in ring in front of people?
Well, you know what? The whole time I was ring announcing and referee and all that stuff. So I probably trained for about a year. I was right before, it was shortly before my 18th birthday when I started wrestling. I started wrestling at 17, and I probably started training at 16. So I trained for at least around a year, and a lot of times the problem is, the big problem is with a lot of guys just, they get out there and they're not ready. I was completely ready because I was completely trained by the time I started wrestling.
When you started wrestling, being that you were from the other side and you're always cursing and screaming at the guy, did that ever make you nervous that you couldn't handle it on the other side of it?
No. I've came across lots of fans that are like I was at that time. And I don't know, it just doesn't bother me. It seems like, you know, the funny thing is those people are the most loyal fans.
That's very true, actually.
Yeah, it is. Go ahead, Dan.
Go ahead, Dean.
Okay. My question revolves around Championship Wrestling Alliance. Apparently, this was the first promotion when you started in 2004 promoting that you were running. Now, just give me some memories of Championship Wrestling Alliance, what it was about, and how that got you ready for the next step.
If there was ever the term dirt poor, dirt floor poor, that's what Championship Wrestling Alliance was. It was a bunch of guys who threw together a wrestling promotion, and there would be chaos behind the scenes, and just to get to the point where we had our shows, and it was a lot of fun, but it was the struggle, it was the learning process. I like to say that under NWA Smoky Mountain, I completed my finishing school with Championship Wrestling to prepare us for what we have become. But it was it was fun. I was more involved as a wrestler at that time. I don't wrestle as much, and I certainly don't wrestle in main events. But then the talent wasn't what we have today. And it's not a knock on those guys, but we didn't have the budget to bring in great talent, so we had to focus on our own. So I did wrestle more main events and more in a higher profile position. But yeah, that definitely we had a lot of fun, but it wasn't the promotion that it became. It was a lot of fun, but now it came to the point where, you know, I've got kids, I'm married, I got house payment, I got all this stuff. Now, you know, it's almost like Championship Wrestling Alliance was my hobby that I wanted to be a job, but NWA Smoky Mountain is my job.
Okay. As a promoter, do you think going through those struggles with Championship Wrestling Alliance made it better for you to go through those early struggles? Made it – you can appreciate what NWA Smoky Mountain is better because of the struggles you had early on.
Exactly, and I think that's 100% true. You see a lot of guys get into wrestling that are just straight up businessmen, and they have all these aspirations of being these huge independent promotions. They get in, and then they're gone after a show when they realize it's not what they thought it was. It is, you have to. I don't care how much money you have when you get into wrestling. If you want to make it serious, you have to go through those struggles. Yeah, it's like I had to learn all those things. I had to learn, you know, the this whole what it takes on your personal life, being a wrestling promoter, and you know, and basically just being broke. Because I funded a lot of my own money into it. Then, I mean, for years and years and years, it was. I mean, we make a good profit now, and we sell DVDs internationally. We have good houses. We're starting with Smart Mark Video on doing their video on demand service next week. So hopefully that'll be another revenue stream for us. So, but I had to learn all these things. I had to put my own money into it just to build the thing up. And when you spend all of your money on a television show every week and just hope that the houses draw so you can live. That makes you respect the wrestling business and what it takes to be a promoter a little bit more when you finally achieve a little bit of success.
Now, those early days, one of the things that struck me about what you said was you had to build on your local talent. Do you think that actually helped out for you as well? Because you had to build up a roster of strong local guys, and then later on with NWA Smoky Mountain, you could bring in the Damian Waynes, the Jason Kincaids, people like that.
Well, you know what? Jason Kincaid actually was a Championship Wrestling Alliance guy. He was there. Here's the weird thing about Jason Kincaid, and for those of you who don't know who Jason Kincaid is, you need to seek him out because he's going to be a big star at least on the independents. And I know that he was in Texas recently, and he impressed the New Japan office when it was down there scouting those guys. And he impressed them. I mean, Jushin Liger, when he come back, him and Chase Owens had a match down there in Houston, and Jushin Liger was there on the show. And when they came back, he was clapping for
him. Oh, wow.
So when you get that kind of praise, and Gato, the booker for New Japan, was there, and he was impressed with both of them. So they may get their shot. They may get their shot in New Japan. I know they impress people at the all day long. So. But Jason Kincaid's a guy that everybody needs to seek out. Jason Kincaid started wrestling. He was a skinny guy, had these sideshow bob hair. But the hair was bigger than he was. And in 2003, I remember this, Wayne Atkins, who was a guy who, he's gone now, but he was one of our top local guys. Jason Kincaid rode down in 2003, and this is not even my show. This is before I even went back to running, but this is at a local show that I was at. Came down, and he came down with another Scotty McKeever, who's a great wrestler from West Virginia. He did jobs in the territory days, but he trained Jason. He brought him down, and the promoter went over to Wayne and said, "Wayne, I'm gonna put you with Jason over here." Wayne looks over at Jason and goes, "No." He didn't even want to wrestle the guy. So. Years later, in 2009, I saw these YouTube videos of this guy, of Jason, and he was just doing these fantastic things, and I thought, wow, this is that same kid. So I ended up booking him there, and he will tell you that the West Virginia wrestling scene was so bad that the first person to really get him out of that scene was me with the Championship Wrestling Alliance. And he got seen on there on the internet. That's how he got his booking for TCW. Matt Rivera from TCW discovered him on my television show. And he would become NWA World Junior Champion. He's traveled all the way to Mexico defending the title. Recently did the NWA shows in Houston and San Antonio, and we were impressed the New Japan promoters. And, you know, that's the most rewarding thing about being a promoter is taking a guy who has the talent and has everything else and giving him a platform to perform where he can make something out of it. And Jason's done that. And we'll continue to do so.
Tony, in a day, on a show day, what does your day entail on a show day? From beginning to end, what do you do, and how much do you actually have a hand in what goes on during the show or behind the scenes with money or bookings? Or what does your day entail?
Well, you know what? It's got a lot easier than it used to be. I used to – see, here I have a very good second job other than just being a wrestling promoter. And
right.
But I work on Saturday. I actually work on Saturday mornings, early Saturday mornings, to the point where it's so early I get home at like 10 o'clock.
Jeez.
So the first thing I do is I go to sleep. And then I have to wake up, but I have to turn my phone off. The reason being because if I don't, people will call about everything. What am I doing tonight? I'm canceling off, blah, blah, blah. We don't have that problem as much anymore. When you're dealing with believe it or not, your out-of-town guys are far more reliable than your local guys. That's why I don't use my local guys. That's why they've all hurried off, you know. Because when you're local, you deal with the drama. You know, I got problems with my wife, blah, blah, blah. And out of town guys, they're there. So, but yeah. I don't have as many problems anymore. But in the old days, I had a lot of problems. I had to turn on my phone. And at 4 o'clock, we get to the building. From there, I have a ring crew that sets things up. And, you know, that's another thing I appreciate. In the championship wrestling, I didn't have a ring crew. And, you know, there were times where me and another guy put the ring by ourselves. But they put the thing up. We set up the production. We usually run about 8 o'clock bell time. So about 6:30, myself and the commentators and the referees will have a little production meeting, and we'll run down everything and how things are supposed to be. I have a booker who helps me with things. His name's Chris Richards, because for years and years I booked myself, but you kind of get burned out. Creatively it's rewarding, but you kind of get burned out to the point where you're telling the same stories over and over again. And it's time to get a fresh opinion. So we do the old Jerry Lawler, Jerry Garrett compromise that they did when they were booking Memphis. One of them booked for 6 months, and then the other one booked for 6 months. They switch back and forth.
That's actually a good idea, because that will keep it fresh.
That's one of the best ideas I've ever heard.
That way, it's not through the eyes of one person, because anybody, I don't care who you are. If Vince Gilligan had to write Breaking Bad for 52 weeks a year, I'm sure somebody else would be writing it after a while. So we sit down and we have our meeting, and then 7 o'clock we get ready to start opening doors, and we open doors at 7:15 on the dot. We usually send out a dark match at 7:45. People don't understand the reason behind a dark match. You'll see a lot of indie shows, they just throw a match out there just because. And everybody thinks, they watch it on WWE, and they say, or they go to WWE show, and they think, oh, they're just trying guys out. That may be the case, but the actual reason for a dark match is they're testing out the equipment. Who in the world is going to go on live television? Who's going to go on live television without balancing balancing the audio and checking the video and everything?
So that's
the reason for the dark. That's the reason there is a dark match. So that's what we do. We have the dark match. We test it. We level everything out. And plus, it does give us an opportunity to give some guys a look and see. A guy wants to come in. Maybe he's come with somebody else, and we like him, so we want to give him a chance to see what he's got. A familiar format that we've come up with for which matches go where. And a lot of people don't have a format. They just throw matches out there and random order. And there's actually a psychology to how the matches go. The first match is always something that's a little fast-paced to get the people up. Second match is if you have a squash or something like that, that's a good place for it, because people don't feel like you're cheating. That you're being cheated. They're being cheated because they saw the first match and it was exciting. We usually run 6 matches. The third match is whatever's advertised throws from top. That way, it's kind of a familiar match to people. It's just one of the matches that you're paying to see. I'm sure you're paying to see all the matches, but it's one of the main matches on the card. That way, we send people to intermission hot. One more, you know. What was referred to in the old days as the popcorn match comes after intermission. And the reason it's called the popcorn match is not everybody's back from the concession stand. Don't get me wrong with saying that I'm thinking that, that it's okay to book bad matches, because it's certainly not. But generally your worst match on the card is the popcorn match. Reason being is because the least amount of people see it. Because they're all getting settled back into their seat. They may be sitting there eating popcorn, not even paying attention to the match. But if you have a whole card of great matches, if you have a match that's kind of a slow builder, that's going to build, the guys are going to, maybe they're going to, start slow and then speed up the pace. It's a good spot for that, because by the time they're eating, maybe these people have got them back into the show. and then obviously the last two matches are your semi and main event. But that's the formula that we use for our cards. Afterwards, we film the rest of the promos for television. There's some things, like if you had an angle where a guy's bloody and stuff, you can't really throw him out there, and you know you can't really tape it before the show. So
yeah,
that's something. So we tape the promos, and that's the wrap. And you know, this it's just not show day. I mean, this is an every. I do something every single day.
Mm.
There's every single day, and you know, I actually keep a social media plan. And I like I said, I'm that's my newest ebook is my social media plan.
What was it like? How did you get involved with New Japan?
Well, I'm not involved with New Japan. The NWA office actually has a working agreement with New Japan.
Oh.
Rob Conway defends the title over there on their pay-per-views. He's actually defending next week on their next iPay-per-view. And the New Japan guys, they came to Texas for the NWA shows in Texas, and they sent Jushin Liger and Tenzan and Watabe, who's an up-and-coming junior weight, and Gato, the booker from New Japan. They all came over here, and a couple of New Japan officials, including the president of the parent company of New Japan, Kabushi Road. And they all came, just last week, they all came down and to do shows in Houston and San Antonio, and Liger and Gato and all the guys worked. And pretty much it was a showcase of some of the best NWA guys. And from all reports I've heard, my guys, Jason Kincaid and Chase Owens, stole the show.
Hmm. Wow. What is it like to run a company with the NWA banner behind it?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing: a lot of people can knock it, and say whatever, and even people that have been in it will come in and say, "Oh, I didn't get nothing out of it." Well, you know, the problem is it's what you make out of it. They're not joining the NWA is not going to fill your buildings. You've still got to go out there and do that. It's not going to automatically change who you are overnight. It did for us, but the reasons were different because I knew what it was. I knew that. We were the Championship Wrestling Alliance. If you do a search on CWA Wrestling, a Google search, do you know how many promotions are going to come up with CWA Wrestling?
Yeah, a couple.
I mean, that's the thing. That's like the promotion that we ended up combining with and merging with in a small town here, Rogersville, Tennessee. They were called the PWF. That was my thing. I told them, I said, okay, we're going to merge and we're going to do this. But we're going to keep the NWA Smoky Mountain name because have you ever done a Google search on PWF Wrestling? Where do you pop up in this? You know, mm-hmm. So when I join the NWA, I get an identity. There is nobody else that's going to – I can do a Google search on NWA Smoky Mountain. No other promotion's coming up. You know, matter of fact, if I do a Google search on Smoky Mountain Wrestling, we are the second thing that comes up behind the Wikipedia for Jim Cornette, Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
I was going to say, the Smoky Mountain, yeah.
And before anybody asks or flames me, we do have permission to use the name.
There you go.
I didn't even think of it.
No, well, I'm talking about you guys. Somebody else will post this. I actually occasionally will send Jim Cornette an email asking advice and stuff like that. He's always cordial enough to send me back very kind words and help me out and give me advice. So we do have the permission to, because it was very important to me. If you act, the footage of Smoky Mountain Wrestling is owned by the WWE.
Yeah.
The name, however, is not.
Oh.
It's not a trademark. If I wanted just to be Smoky Mountain Wrestling, Then I could be, but you know that's I don't want to be confusion. I don't want there to be the NWA, you know, Smoky Mountain. I want it to be its own brand, but I want people to kind of hear, because in this area Smoky Mountain Wrestling was so big. I want people to you know, have that memory of, okay, this is the new Smoky Mountain Wrestling. It's not the same thing, but it's the same quality of wrestling, the same philosophy that we remember before.
Right. compared to, you know, the 60s, 70s, 80s, even before that, how much influence does the NWA actually have on your daily operations, if at all?
You know what? They have a hands off approach. They don't interject themselves into my business. The worst thing in the world could be these guys are just being, if they were overbearing and just constantly on you and micromanaged you. You know, nobody wants to deal with that. All they require is that you book their champions and recognize their world champions, and that's a fair request. And you know what? It actually works well at the box office. Rob Conway, he's the current world champion. And you know what? And not to his detriment. Before he was champion, I was totally against a former WWE guy holding that title.
Whoa.
The reason being was I thought that people would think, well, here's this guy, he didn't do anything, he's a WWE reject or whatever. But what happened is, Conway is the guy. If you actually, you look at Rob Conway and you look at his work, you can actually make the argument, and I think it's valid, that they didn't exactly use him to the best of his potential. When you market that guy as, here's the guy that didn't get his fair shake, that if on a different day, on a different time, in the right place, could have been on top if they chose to. And he is talented, he is smart, he is a great ambassador, he's well-spoken, he is well dressed, comes to the shows well dressed, great representative of the NWA. And the first time I brought him in, he wrestled Ricky Morton in a match where every year we have the Smoky Mountain Cup. It's our tournament, and we had Ricky Morton pull the upset on Adam Pearce. Roll him up, and people went nuts. So because it was totally unexpected, and we. The winner got the NWA World Title shot. We billed it as his last shot ever. As many times, you know, he had 9 1-hour draws with Ric Flair. He's had several other opportunities, but we billed it as his last shot. And the play, we actually ran against a Diamond Rio concert that was free downtown. in the middle of the street downtown, and we actually still drew.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'll tell you what, I didn't know who Diamond Rio was before this came up, but apparently they're pretty big. We brought Conway back the second time, and we didn't expect it. It was a summer show. It was August. We didn't expect to do that much. I didn't expect it to be that great. It turned out it was our second. Biggest show of the year in our main building. No, we've ran some high school shows this year. We drew 2,017 people. We were 9 people away from capacity for the building. Fair shows. We did a block party show in between two banks. In between a block party in a town of like 4,000 people in between two banks. And there was 1,500 people standing around us, or circling the ring. We've done some big houses, and we've done some shows, you know, like at the carnivals and festivals that have over 1,000 eyeballs have been on the show. But this show with Rob Conway was our biggest show in our regular build. We drew around 400 people. Which is, we usually draw on our regular building that we run every month. We usually draw 200 to 300 people or so. Which for an independent promotion, that's quite respectable considering
good.
Most people are doing like 50. I mean, if that. But things are working out.
When you draw as high as you draw, like when you get, you know, over 1,000, do you get cocky or do you not let it get to your head as a booker?
here's the thing. I try not to. But there's been situations where I've over-budgeted shows, and I have drew gigantic houses and still lost money. Generally, that kind of happens. Like say that I draw a good house, and I'm thinking, man, if I put more money into it, I could draw an even bigger house. And then I'll put more money into it, and you know, over budget it, and then I've drawn, you know, maybe I've made a small profit or I've lost money. But that's happened before. But that's the kind of thing I try to get away from. I book a lot of guys that the old time promoters. And my competition guys will always say, oh, that guy ain't going to draw. Nobody knows who he is. I've got Cedric Alexander and Caprice Coleman from Ring of Honor. Now, you can look at it and say, oh, nobody knows what Ring of Honor is. It's not on TV here. I've booked Davey Richards. And these old time and my competition have said the same thing. There are people that will travel to my shows from a couple hours out. Because what we've established is that when you come to my shows, you're going to see top quality wrestling, better than anything in our region, and one of the best promotions in the South. So people will drive 2 or 3 hours because what I'm selling is not a name, not one particular person. What I'm selling is you come to this show, and you're going to see the best wrestling that you're going to see around, and that's what's worked for us.
Okay, now. My question is, how did you go from drawing, say, the 50 people when you first started out to doing what you do now, to drawing 400 consistently, to drawing 1,500 when you have Conway come? How did that happen? I know it doesn't happen overnight, and it's not really an easy answer, but what went into building the promotion like you did?
Well, you know what I said, it was that learning process. It's like one of those things. If you want to learn to be successful, you're going to have to fail. You're going to have to fail and learn from your failures. There's some people that fail over and over again. They're not going to learn anything. But there's many people like that. They're just content with and there's a lot of promoters that are just content with drawing 50 people. Well, we drew 50 people. We got out there. We had fun. That's fantastic. That's awesome. That's not what I want to do. Our regular house is 300 people paid. I don't want to draw 300 people paid. I want to come up with a way to draw 500. It's one of those things where you just have to be never. You just have to get to the point where you can't be satisfied. There's always more that you can do. There's always people that you can reach that you haven't don't know about your show. Or there's people you can reach that aren't haven't been to one of your shows but have heard of you, but you got to find the secret to actually get them in there. But the thing is our first show, we took over in 2004. We took over for another local promoter. He drew like five people, like literally five paying people like the month before. So we got in there and we promoted and we put our posters out and everything and we drew 25 people. Okay. We came back a month later, and we drew 50 people. And we just kept on going on and on like that. And there's been dips, and there's been times that have been bad. But the thing is, and this is, you know, no matter what any promoter can say out there, the only job that a promoter has, if you want to put it in the most simple bottom-line terms, if you want to be successful, you have to do whatever it takes to get people in that building. You have to go out there and you know, while most people were shopping last year, I spent my Black Friday going from Walmart to mall to mall putting flyers on people's cars. We did this from 9 o'clock on Thanksgiving night till about 11 the next day.
Wow.
Because there were so many stores and stuff, and we went from town to town and just did it. And we came back on Saturday. We had our show on Thanksgiving was Thursday. We put those flyers out on Black Friday. our show was on Saturday night, and we sold out a very small building. It only holds about 200 people. We run this building monthly, and we've sold it out quite a few times this year. We actually had Billy Gunn the week after he was on Raw, like their last little run, and
nice.
It was his last. We were actually worried about it because he was on Raw Monday. We had commercials on Raw, you know, on that show. We were worried about, you know, is he going to make it? Is he going to come? Is he going to come? He's back in WWE. It was I believe it was his last independent booking. But it was a lot of stroke of luck because it was like, wow, this guy just happened to be, you know, just happened. We booked the guy and he just happened to end up on Raw Monday, you know. And we got the commercials right there featuring him, and he's on, you know. And we didn't know he was going to be on there, but it just turned out as it was one of those complete stroke of luck. We should have turned people away, but we just did standing room only tickets.
Wow.
If the fire marshal ain't there, I'm packing until somebody tells me not to.
Now, another question is, well, not really a question, but it's more of an observation. So just plugging away through conventional means in conjunction with the social media, is that probably your best chance? Because
yeah, here's the thing.
This – go ahead.
Go ahead. You know, here's the thing about this. A lot of people will focus on one or the other. If you focus your attention and believe that social media is that just having social media is going to help you draw, you're out of luck. It's not going to happen. Those conventional ways of promoting, you still have to do it. And I knew this guy who would buy a spot like every commercial break during SmackDown. And that was his only – he drew, but he didn't draw that great. I'm pretty sure he probably lost money. But the thing was, and I like the way I like it, he skipped steps. If you're going to spend the money to have a TV commercial, and I mean, we run TV commercials on Raw and SmackDown too, because that's like the best, because it's the best – it's the best way to get the people that are watching wrestling, the people that are most likely to come to your shows. It is the target demographic. You know, everybody watching is what likes wrestling, so you've got the target demographic there. But it's like if you're going to spend that time and get those commercials, what's wrong with buying some posters for $50? You know, or going out and flying some cars or doing the, you know. Or doing all the small steps too, because your goal as a promoter is to make sure that everybody, whether they come or not, your goal is to make sure that everybody in the town that you're running knows of your show. Now it's also up to you to try to get the people in there, but you want to at least give them the opportunity to say no. You know, I mean, you know, you want to give them the opportunity to let people know there's a show. So if you've got – I'm saying hang posters. I'm saying attack social media. And also, a lot of people get the thing where they don't have a website. They just have a social media. And there's a big problem with that, and I explained this in my e-book, that a social media is supposed to be like a satellite that goes back to the hub, and the hub is your website. Mm-hmm. It's like you want to get people there. That's where you want people having the information, but you use all these different social media outlets to get people there. You know, when I want to look up information on Ring of Honor or UFC or something, or even WWE, I'm not going to go to their Facebook site as my first call to action. I'm going to go to their website. And a lot of promoters forget that that's how it actually works. You want to make sure that when people want information, they go to your website. And that's just, you know, they're going to look for it. But you can use that social media to get people back there.
You know what? That's really an interesting thing, because when you think about it, if you want to look up just post office information, you're not going to go to the local post office Facebook. You're going to go to the USPS.com.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, a, and I mean, if they had, if the post office runs ads on Facebook, they do a lot. I've actually seen the post office do promoted posts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's going to kick you back to the website.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like it's just social media is misused, and that's why I wrote the e-book. I want people to understand that things like, for example, if you post something on Facebook, the life of a Facebook post is 3 hours.
Yeah.
After three, once you post, and once if you post two consecutive posts and you have a page, the first post is going to knock the second post is going to knock the first post out of on most people's on most people's walls.
Mm-hmm.
So in their newsfeed, they're going to see the first the second post. But if the first post was important, they're probably not going to see it. Because you don't go up and down to your Facebook wall anymore, and it's not a real life timeline. Like Twitter is a real life timeline. It goes in order of what was posted by everybody you follow. Facebook is fickle. It posts it like examines what you follow and who you're following and all this stuff. But so you have to make sure that you post it and get the life give each post life. Enough a lifeline, like 3 hours before you post something else. And I explain all of this stuff.
Well, would it make sense to schedule, because there's like different softwares, there's different websites such as Hootsuite and things like that where you can schedule posts. Would that be a way to do it?
I schedule my post at 9 o'clock in the morning for the whole day.
Really?
I use a Pacific program. I probably made a post right now. Actually, what time is it? Yeah, I just made a post 2 minutes ago. I mean, but I'm sitting here talking on the phone to you guys. I schedule all of my posts, and even when I don't have a scheduled post for you're not getting booked. Whenever I come across something, and I'll post it. But if it's something I will, but if I find two things that I like to post, I do schedule the second one.
Okay.
But on my NWA Smoky Mountain page, we post 5 times a day. At the same times every day, according to when our most fans are online.
You use the Facebook Insights for that, right?
Yeah, if I use the Facebook Insights and I find out when our most people, and you know the thing is, it's weird because I always thought that if I matched up the trends to the NWA Facebook page and the You're Not Getting Booked Facebook page, the same people would, you know, the people would be online at the same time. That's actually not the case. There's actually different times and stuff like that. So I had to come up with a different schedule for that. But an ebook and people are, you know, they'll always say, oh, you have an ebook. What do you know? You know, whatever. But nobody who has ever read my ebook, Sheldon Goldberg, who runs NECW in New England Championship Wrestling, told me, he says, I didn't know who you were when I first ordered your ebook, but he goes, I sat and thought, this guy's brilliant. So that's not coming from me. I'm just a guy who has 11 years of experience, 12 years of experience, promoting wrestling shows.
I think that's a topic for something for another time. Quite frankly, I got to get my hands on this ebook. I sent you my information about that earlier today. Make sure you get it to me because I'd love to have you back on to talk about that because I think that's a whole different topic that could take an hour at least, an hour and a half, maybe.
An hour.
There's about 10 topics I could talk about. Like, we haven't even touched You're Not Getting Booked.
Into that, actually. I'm glad you did. But how did You Are Not Getting Booked, how did that come about and become the beast it's become?
There was a guy a couple of years ago that sent me a friend request. And he sent me a friend request, and he sent me a message afterwards and said, hey, would you be interested in booking me? How do I get booked at one of your shows? The guy's profile picture was Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I posted to my wall, on my wall, my friends, if you send me a request to get booked and your profile picture is Steve Austin, you were not getting booked. So people thought it was funny, so I kept on doing different things. And somebody said, man, you should make a page with all this stuff. So I made a page with all this stuff. In the first, there was a day in the first week it was open where I got a new like for every minute of the day.
Wow.
I don't think they were all the one. There may be a minute that I didn't get a like, but on average, I got a like for every minute of the day. I used to do pictures, more pictures than I do. But people, when it's like when you post a picture, Facebook can take that down. They can, you know, come down on you. The first time I actually got up to 5,000 likes in like a couple of weeks, and they ended up taking all my likes away.
Really? Why?
Facebook did, yeah. Because I had been flagged like 6 times in like a week. I ended up but the thing is, videos are all, it's all fair game because people have posted those things on their own, on YouTube and stuff. Yeah, so I can put that out there, and a lot of times you'll see I put it out there and then like a couple hours later they take it down. I can post that stuff out there. And these people need to be outed because these are the kind of people that are ruining our business.
Hmm. So, like the weekend warriors, the ones that get out there, don't really. What's the criteria though to get on? You're not getting booked. Is it just the lack of gear? Is it they just look bad? Or what exactly catches your eye and then it winds up on the page?
You know, I could. The criteria is if it's bad. This thing, like John Cena comes out wearing shorts, but at least those shorts are clean. Some of these guys, you see guys wearing jeans with grass stains on them in the ring. I mean, there's some stuff just people that are dirty and grungy and all kinds of different things. Basically, if I watch the video and you're horrible, then I'm not gonna. I'm going to put you on there. There was one time somebody sent me some wrestling from like, God, I don't know, it was like India or somewhere. And the guys, the production was fantastic. And they had a great set. And the place was packed. And they had the guys came down, they had good bodies, and they were wearing gear. And they proceeded to have the worst match I have ever seen. It was like the translation of what American wrestling was supposed to be. Just everything translated to what they were doing, except for the actual wrestling. they're just horrible. There's not the real criteria as if I were to watch it or a veteran wrestler were to watch it, you know, if you were to watch it and say these guys don't know what they're doing, then that's what goes on there.
Okay, and I have a question. The last thing I think you put up was that casket match with the two guys. They were in their 50s, I guess. And where do you find this stuff? Do you just see it on YouTube, or it's sent to you?
Here's the way it used to work. When I first started, I actually used to go back and I would get footage that people actually sent me to try to get booked. After a while, and this is great for me because I really don't book people off emails anyway. So people other than a few brave souls don't send me as much stuff. But I probably get 10 requests a day from people or submissions a day from people sending me stuff saying, put this on here. people submit stuff constantly. And most of the submissions that I get are people that have heat with somebody else, and they'll be like, "Tell this story," and they'll be like, "This guy ripped people off on money." I'm like, "I don't know any of this. I don't have. I mean, if I put this up, it's just a personal grudge between you and this guy. You know, I don't want to put that up. Show me footage that the guy sucks. You know, show me footage that the promotion's bad. Show me footage that they do ring announcement over the mic or over the house mic."
Oh, stop
it. That's the worst. And, you know, that's the common thing. If you go on there and look at those matches, about half of them have commentary over the house mic.
I know.
In my years.
All of my years
in wrestling, I have actually never seen anybody do that other than on these videos.
I've worked a few shows. I'm sorry to say I have worked a few shows that had the commentary over house mics.
Were any of them actually good?
Not really.
I have relationships with people, so I'm going to say they were.
What are you saying is he's laughing because you guys suck. He's not saying that because he doesn't want to burn any bridges.
Oh, man. Well, it's over now, Dean. You'll never worry about
it. He didn't say it, I did.
Thank you, Tony.
But he's retarded. Because here's the thing. When you have a heel out there trying to get heat, and, you know, and maybe he's got some brass knucks hidden in his boot, and you got the guy on the microphone going, he's got the brass knucks hidden on the boot, the referee can't see him. Stupid as that sounds.
It's happened before, trust me. We had a sneak attack going on, and my broadcast partner is like, oh, look behind so-and-so. He's right there. He's going to get him. I'm like, oh, my God. It's just, I hate it. It's stupid. It's just so
I can hear you,
bad.
You know.
It's just bad. But go ahead.
Okay.
It was easy.
There's lots of things. I mean, that's not even the worst thing. There's lots of things out there that are just hideous. Yeah, that's one of the worst things. That's one of the things. It's a pretty common thing. A lot of guys, you know, whenever a trend comes around in wrestling, and it's not particularly a bad, a good trend. Like when the Hardy Boys came out and started getting big, in like '98 and you know, the early 2000s, everybody had those stupid Hardy Boy pants, and they'd be wrestling in the Hardy Boy pants.
I had the pants, granted.
Well, you know, the thing about it is what people don't understand about the Hardy Boy pants is they were the Hardy Boy's pants. why in the world do you think Vince McMahon wants another Jeff Hardy when he has a real one? The thing is, when these guys started out, they had gear on. When John Cena started out, he had gear on. He developed his persona, and then it came to this. If I see a guy in jeans and jean shorts and it's not John Cena, he's an idiot. because he developed this. That's what he does. He makes millions and millions of dollars with it. You make $25 tops, if not working for free, which is more likely.
That's true.
If you're out there wrestling in jeans on jean shorts on independent shows, stop. Stop right now. Really take a look at yourself. You know, I put a guy on there getting booked one time named Ricky Cena. The guy coming, he was a skinny guy that wrestled in John Cena gear.
Ricky Cena.
This guy wrestled as Ricky Cena. I've seen all kinds of them, man. Listen, when I used to do independent shows at this place, and every guy at this show, I'm not going to talk about the promotions. Every guy on the show looked like he was a real life mechanic, and they were all doing Undertaker gimmicks. And I'm talking Undertaker. It was A or B. They were either the dead man, or the biker when he's doing the biker thing, or some of them were the biker from hell, you know, doing the both. I'm the dead man biker, you know, and it's like everybody was doing this. That was a thing. Everybody wants to be a biker.
A dead biker.
Or a fat neck biker.
A dead biker. They get the lines crossed.
Or a fat biker.
There's a guy here locally. And he's a nice guy. I'm not burying the guy. Well, I mean, I'm getting ready to bury the guy, but I'm not burying him as a person. Because he's a nice guy. He wrestles as the Minister of Darkness in full Undertaker gear. Hey, one of my friends urinated in this guy's bag.
For good reason.
Yes, for good reason. He should have defecated in his bag.
Yeah,
exactly. But nothing personal against the guy, but he also did do one of the stupidest things I've ever seen. He was, you know, putting heat on somebody, right? Getting them, beat them, and this guy was supposed to come in and do a run in for the save, right? He was going to give him a choke slam. Well, for some reason, instead of beating the guy up in the ring, he was beating the other guy up on the floor. So the other guy runs in. So what does he do? He choke slams this guy on the floor.
Oh!
Just straight up sends him to the hospital. I like to call this guy the Indie Taker. The Indie Taker is a nice guy as a human being, and he probably could be. He probably could be a good worker if he didn't have Undertaker gear. He's got the full-on gear. His name is the Minister of Darkness. That's like the one-man state. He had the Ministry of Darkness. That was the stable, right?
Yeah, Ministry of Darkness,
This guy is the Minister of Darkness.
Yeah.
And this guy wrestles as just the Minister of Darkness. I mean, that's retarded. I'm gonna get a guy that wrestles as Los Boricua, just one man by himself. Los Boricua.
Los plural.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, listen, I had a guy one time, a tag team that goes, we got new music, and they come out with the new music, and it's I Stand Alone, a movie from the Scorpion King. You've never seen anything until you see two guys coming out to I Stand Alone. This is in the old championship wrestling days. This happened on my show. These guys, I thought, you guys are idiots. And then you'll get the guys to hand you music, and it's not edited, and they don't care, and there's people out there with kids, and there's the F word dropping like crazy, and you're like, cut it off. People are real stupid with music too.
Yes, they are. Hey,
I've seen people come out to WWE music and all kinds of stuff.
I was talking earlier. I have to take it because I want you to plug this on the show. I was complimenting earlier on the production on Smoky Mountain, and you announced that you wanted to take it a step further and you have a Kickstarter going. I want you to plug that right now and tell you what you want to accomplish.
Well, as we've talked about earlier, you know, it has not been easy to produce a wrestling television show every week for 9 years now. It's been a challenge. Here's the thing. I actually do the production myself.
Ooh.
Yeah, I taught myself how to do it. Now, I did end up getting. I have it professionally shot. I have a guy that comes that runs a TV station here. Actually, comes and shoots the show. It's professionally shot. I do the editing, the post editing myself, and have for the whole run. The thing is, I'm not a professional, and if the as good as the show looks, it will look better if I had somebody, you know, that actually could do it themselves. And I've talked to some people that are right now are doing production for a fantastic independent show. It's a show based in Florida. I don't want to throw out who it is because I'm not still in their production. I'm just giving their production company more work. But
right.
I still don't want to throw that out there. But
sure.
But they have an independent promotion in Florida, has just recently started a TV show. They're on about episode 8, and it is a fantastic, the best production I've seen on the independents.
Wow.
So that's the crew I've talked about using, and I've talked to them about it. But the thing is, to get these guys up here in Florida, and to get the correct lighting that I need, and I'm going to have to purchase lighting, and I'm going to have to purchase different things, it's going to cost a lot of money, you know?
Yeah.
We turn a profit, so I mean, I'm willing to pay my share of it, but I need to start. So we're doing the Kickstarter program to help us up our production. We're a true Cinderella story. We came from nothing. Like I said, the first promoter here was drawing five people. We came back the next week, next month into 25, and we started from there. We've built up from 25 people all the way to 2017 people earlier this year. We had a league story in the PWI independent column this year.
Wow.
We've had a my wrestlers are wrestling in Texas. A few of them are wrestling for TCW that has the national TV on the Pursuit Network on Dish Network and DirecTV. But they all got their opportunities and here, and they broke their and they got their big shot here. We are home to the NWA World Junior Heavyweight Title. Two of my wrestlers are in a feud for that, battling for that all over the country, really. We have nearly 7,000 Facebook fans.
Wow.
We've come a long way, but the thing is, I want to make something special. I don't want to be just the promoter that has his TV show and he draws 300 people and he's happy. Like I said earlier, I want to take it as far as I can. I want to shoot for the stars. We've got homegrown talent here that we continue to help people out. And one of the perks and the rewarding thing for me is, and we can do this even with more people with the Kickstarter program, is giving people a shot, is giving guys that are talented, and maybe they don't have the WWE look. Maybe they don't have, they're not 6'5" and completely jacked up and everything. Maybe they don't have that, but they've got talent. And I want to showcase those people with talent out there and give them an opportunity. So this is not something where I'm saying, I need $15,000 to put in my pockets, or I need $15,000 to make, make the brand better so I can make more money. Is it going to be, will that happen? Maybe. But the main thing is I'm going to give guys who deserve it a chance. And I'll be able to do this for years and years to come. I just need to start. Here's the thing. You'll see a lot of promoters. They're either rich, they come from money, and they're spending mommy and daddy's money, or they've won the lottery or something, or they come from another business and they've had success there and they've made a whole bunch of money. Me, I was nothing. I was a 19-year-old kid who had been wrestling for a couple of years, who had a part-time job, nothing fancy. I just wanted to make wrestling better. And we didn't have a shoestring budget. We had no budget. And we just built up from that. And, even if the Kickstarter project is a failure, it's not like we're going to, close up shop or anything. But it's not like we won't get to the point where we plan to get to anyways. But wouldn't it be nice to get there a little bit faster, And here's the thing about it is, it's not like we're begging for money as opposed to, if you go on there and look at the rewards, they actually match up to what will be a great special if you look at, the merchandise that's on there. Like, we have packages on there that blow away the prices of DVDs and merchandise on our website. We also have personal experiences. Like, there's a reward where you can get have a lunch with Ricky Morton. But there's this personal experience on there, stuff that you're just not gonna be able to get. So I mean, there's great rewards on there. We just we just need that support to get to where we need to be and help out more people and give the fans a more enjoyable product. Because go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to ask you. You can elaborate because this kind of goes hand in hand with the Kickstarter. I mean, what do you want from Smoky Mountain? Do you want to keep it regional, or do you want to try to go as high as possible?
It's to go as high as possible. Wow. That's the thing about it is, it's like everybody will ask me, what is your goal? I want to be the best promotion in the country. Is it going to happen?
Wow.
Probably not. Okay?
Yeah.
But if I shoot for that, that's going to take me pretty high. You know,
yeah,
if I keep on reaching
be the best
that,
you can.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's to be the best we can. It's to see how far we can take things. Can we take things to to where we run the whole south, run shows in the whole southeast? Well, maybe so. Well, but I've got to try. You know, the way I'm
right
wired.
Right, TNA
is,
needs a buyer.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Maybe I should do a Kickstarter to buy TNA.
Yeah, there you go. I'll donate to that, brother.
I'm actually wondering why nobody has.
I don't know.
You know what? I wonder if I contact the TNA, I can start a Kickstarter. But listen, I want to start a Kickstarter to see if I can get fans to hate your product to let me buy it. Yeah.
There's more people there than they were at the pay-per-view.
Hey, listen, $10,000, you can write an episode, and it'll probably be better than anything Vince Russo ever wrote.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's probably true. Now, Tony, we are running out of time with you. Actually, we went over a little, but that's perfect because it sets up, I'm going to leave people. And I think you started, this was the opening match, I think, because I think we can have you on so many times with so many different topics. I think this is the start of a beautiful relationship, as they say. What I want to get out of you right now is where can people follow both NWA Smoky Mountain? Where can they follow You Are Not Getting Booked? Give me all those plugs.
You can follow NWA Smoky Mountain at www.nwasmokymountain.com. Like I said, we've got Facebook and all that stuff, and you can find all the links there because that's how it's supposed to be done. Yeah. However, You're Not Getting Booked is not a profit thing, so it doesn't really, I don't make any profit off of doing it. It's just something that I think is fun, and I like burying people. So Facebook.com/ You Are Not Getting Booked is completely spelled out. Originally, I was going to make it You're Not Getting Booked, but unfortunately, I didn't want a contraction in the name. So it is You Are Not Getting Booked at that's the username on Facebook.
All right, Tony, I do want to thank you for your time. I know how busy you must be. When's your next event? If people want to check
Saturday.
It out, if they're in that. Oh, it's this Saturday.
This
what
Saturday,
do you got going
we're
on?
Doing it is a benefit. Half of the money off through the door goes to the America Cancer Society in the name of a friend of mine that passed away. And the other half of the money is going to the medical bills for a guy named Zach Vincent, who's a great wrestler from Ohio who wrestled for me on a regular basis over the last year. He actually just had brain surgery. He had a tumor on his brain, and he just had surgery to remove the tumor from his brain stem. And it was a successful surgery and everything, and he's on the road to recovery, and hopefully he'll be back in the room in the ring soon. But medical bills on a brain surgery, I don't even want to think about what that is.
We're not going to be able to pay all of it
Saturday night. But if we can just give them whatever we can, and the best we can, that's what we're trying to make. Because I'm sure at this point anything will help. So that's what's going on. It's the NWA Mid-Atlantic tag titles on the line from our friends at the NWA Mid-Atlantic promotion in West Virginia. I don't know why they're NWA Mid-Atlantic. West Virginia doesn't even touch the coast. I'm sorry. I hope I didn't offend the guy. I'm sorry, but it doesn't. They're presenting a NWA Mid-Atlantic tag title match. The Lords of Chaos, Damian Wayne and Lance Erickson, are going to take on the CNC Wrestle Factory from Ring of Honor.
Oh, wow.
And,
that's
Chase
pretty
Owens,
big. Damian Wayne, yeah. Damian
Chase
Wayne's
Owens,
well-known, yeah. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, he's actually becoming a pretty regular on our shows. We use him on a pretty regular basis. And in 2014, it'll even be more so. Chase Owens, the NWA World Junior Champion, will team with Chris Richards to wrestle our tag champions, Air America, So there's that. And that's the big two double main event tag team matches. The rest is a lot of the top local talent, and there is a great local talent here. But Shinron, who just recently who debuted for Chikara on the show before their last show.
Mm-hmm.
He will be there. He's from Atlanta. He was trained by A.R. Fox and Mr. Hughes. He just recently wrestled for Beyond Wrestling. He is a great talent. If Chikara starts back up, he'll be on the regular roster. He wrestles for Wrestling Is Fun, which has kind of taken their place on a lower level.
Mm-hmm.
But talk about a guy that drives around a lot. He's from Atlanta. He's from Atlanta, and he drives all the way up north and to do those shows, and he comes up here, which is not quite as far. But he's a great talent. He'll be there Saturday night, and I think he's a name that you'll be hearing more about in the future. But
I had the pleasure to see him wrestle on a Wrestling Is Cool show not that long ago, so I'm well familiar with him.
He is. Have you guys ever seen the clip of the guy that does the crazy moonsault and breaks his neck on the air on Tosh.0?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's completely sick. That's him.
That's him. That's the same.
Whoa.
No, that's not the
yeah.
same. It is.
Yeah.
No.
It's the same guy. That guy was named Charade, and he actually did the crazy flip and broke his neck, and he actually fractured his skull. He ended up coming back, and he does. I don't see how it's like he's fearless. He still does all that stuff. You know, he does his finisher in a 630 off the middle rope, which just defies logic.
It does. I had no idea. When I was watching him, it was the same guy. Wow.
Yeah, that's the same guy. He was on Tosh.0, breaking his neck, and he wrestled as Charade, and now he goes under the mask as Shinron. And I guess the mask is pretty useless now because I just spoiled his secret identity.
Yes, you did.
Oh, man. You are not getting booked, Tony.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I know.
But
I think it's an open thing. I think the thing is it's an open thing. He wants people to know this because it's like the mask of the new start.
Yeah, because I did see there was some special about him coming back from that injury. So and he does a lot for the community and stuff. It's actually a pretty inspirational story.
Awesome. Have you actually seen his little documentary? It's on Charade TV or whatever it is.
Yeah.
He's got a little documentary. It's fantastic. He's a great guy. He's actually a gymnastics teacher at summer camps and stuff. He travels all over the country doing gymnastics, teaching gymnastics, and he actually works for Olympians. He actually coaches like Olympians gymnastics camp. So he's incredible, just incredible ability. Great guy too. I had never heard of him. We had an open tryout from Atlanta and blew everybody away.
Yeah, definitely. But, Tony, on that note, I got to get you back on. We have another guest. They're knocking on the door. But, my goodness, this was amazing, and I cannot wait to have you back on. Send me that ebook, and we'll get you back on. We'll talk about it. We'll discuss it a little bit. But you have a great night, Tony.
Hey, you guys, too. Thank you for letting me come on.
Oh, no problem. And you have an open invite whenever you want to come back.
Thank you.
I cannot wait until we get him back on.
No, he's got... That is one of the more brilliant minds of the business that I've heard. And the
Because, Dan, he learned by going through failure. I think that was key to everything he said. When you have those obstacles...
It's a strong word. And when you fail, you gotta climb back up and you gotta succeed one level or another.
One level or another. But speaking about failure, I am a failure at time management tonight because our next guest is already 5 minutes. We haven't even discussed MMA, but that's fine because what we have discussed tonight has been absolutely brilliant. But we're going from one brilliant thing to another. It's, of course, Craven Vero. Now, Craven, since last time we talked to him, he's won titles. He's been to different places. He is actually, Dan, the Suicidal Six-Way Champion for Pro Wrestling Syndicate. Of course, that lovely promotion up in Rahway, New Jersey.
Yeah, man.
Now, the Suicidal Six-Way, it's a six-man match, one fall to a finish, and he's the champion. He's about a little over a year in.
He's accomplished so much in that year, and especially compared to the last time we talked to him.
Oh, definitely. And not only, I mean, trained by Sammy Callahan, whether the guy takes Xboxes or not, that's a hell of an accomplishment.
That's pretty important, okay, the Xbox thing. I don't want to talk about it.
You don't want to talk about the Xbox?
No.
But I'll tell you what I do want to talk about. I want to talk to Craven Vero right after this.
Let's get him. Yeah!
Right, the Suicidal Six-Way Champion for Pro Wrestling Syndicate. Our guest at this time is Craven Vero. Craven, it's been a while. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We are doing, of course, that's Dan over there to my left and Omega to my right. But
hey!
Staring right in front of me is Craven Vero. Craven, my God, so much time has passed. I didn't even realize we haven't had you on this year. But I want to catch up. The Suicidal Six-Way. You have records in this. You've been in the most Suicidal Six-Way matches. You're the champion. How did all this happen? Because when I went last December, of course I went last December, I wanted to see Sammy Callahan take on Goldust. True story. It happened at PWS. You never know what's going to happen at PWS. But, yeah, it was just a match. Now you're the champion of it. How did that happen?
Right, well, it kind of all started with that event, honestly, man. I mean, you know, I train with Pat Buck at the Pro Wrestling Syndicate School, and like you mentioned, Sammy Callahan, Rich Swann were some of our trainers initially, were co-trainers under Pat. But, you know, I got to a point where with my style, I'm trying to think, so I started in June, that was December. So, you know, it was about 5.5 months I'd been training at that point, and they were doing a crazy eight as opposed to a suicidal six way at that December event. And, I forget who it was, but someone was supposed to be there and ended up dropping out. And, Pat said that he felt that my style fit the match and he gave me the opportunity. And, they, you know, that was that show with you. And I happened to be in my first big multiple man match like that with Jerry Lynn and, you know, one of my trainers, Rich Swann, and John Silver, Lance on Hawaii, and, you know, a bunch of guys like that I ended up working with more in the future. And, you know, I kind of just stayed in that role. And from December and then in January, I wrestled my trainer, Pat Buck, one-on-one. And then between then and July, I wrestled in every Suicidal Six-Way. So since there's other guys kind of moving around on the card and having different matches, I stayed like the one guy who was literally in every six-way, so it got to the point where by June I actually broke a record where I had been in the most six-ways of anyone in the company. It was six suicidal six-ways, as ironic as that is. And then in July I got my second one-on-one match in PWS, and that was against the then heavyweight champion Kevin Matthews, the main event of PWS The Future Is Right Now. And That was a really big match. It was my first main event for PWS, and I was wrestling the champ. And, you know, the next month I was I got my first actual title opportunity because my match against Kevin wasn't a championship match. You know, I didn't get a title shot, but I did get an opportunity to wrestle the champion. So the next month they gave me an opportunity at the mid-card title, the tri-state title. And then at that show they announced it was going to be replaced with the new Suicidal. Well, actually, excuse me, it's renamed because I looked at the history. They're keeping the title history. So it's more one of those cases where the belt got renamed and rethemed, but it's keeping its history. And I ended up winning that match. And that month in September, we actually ended up having three events that month. So I won that big one, Return to Rahway in the first one, defended it the next day, defended it a week later, and I actually just defended it for the third time this past Saturday night.
Okay, before we get there, I want to go back a little bit. Let's go back to when you had your first singles match against Pat Buck. Now, what was that like getting in there with your trainer? I'm sure that had to be some nerves. I'm sure a lot had to be going on there.
Oh, my God, yeah, man. I mean, on top of all that, it was my very first one-on-one match because, I had wrestled a Battle Royal, a Survivor Series-style match, another Battle Royal, and then the eight-way with Jerry Lynn in December. So I never got a chance to do a one-on-one match. And anywhere else I wrestled outside of PWS at that point, still early on in my career, I was throwing, multiple-man matches and tag matches and stuff like that. So that was actually my career-first one-on-one match, and to have that at Pro Wrestling Syndicate in front of that big crowd wrestling my trainer was just, insane, man. And, for my first one-on-one match, we went 12 minutes, and we got a standing ovation at the end. I ended up rolling him up with the crucifix and getting the win, and, it was a great moment, man. After the match, he shook my hand and raised my hand and left and let me have my moment, and it was that. It's rare that you get to say, you had a career moment, a few months into your career, you know what I mean? So, having my debut in a Battle Royal in September, and then fast forward to January, and that match and that moment with Pat, it was just surreal.
Now, let's fast forward a little bit to Kevin Matthews. Of course, he's well-known on the independents. He has somewhat of a reputation as well. Some things that happened in developmental, that sort of thing. But he's a name on the independent scale. What's it like getting in there with the PWS champion at that time?
Well, right, exactly. Like you were saying about Kevin, he's a similar boat with Pat, where he was in that developmental system for a while. Pat was OVW and Kevin was Deep South. They're both big guys that, they've been in the system before. They know how everything works. And that show had a very similar feel to the show I wrestled Pat in January, because the show in January, that was PWS Student Clash. That was PWS's first event where any student who had been training for over 3 months got an opportunity to wrestle on the show. And then this one was PWS The Future Is Right Now, where I wrestled Kevin Matthews. Same deal, because we consistently get waves and waves of students. We have 40 students in the school right now. So on the rare opportunities that they do these shows where they let some kind of theme show where they let students who have been 3 months and up perform on the shows, it's a really big deal for them and for us, And that show was the biggest deal for me since Student Clash because, Student Clash, I got to wrestle Pat, and now I'm getting to wrestle Kevin Matthews, the PWS Heavyweight Champion. It's the main event. So that was just going into that match, man, Kevin Matthews is massive. He's 6'5", he's 260s, he's a big guy, so
You don't realize it until you're next to him. Yeah, until you're next to him, you really don't realize it.
Right, and I'm tall, but I'm kind of built like Psychosis, I'm like a tall, skinny guy. I'm 6'2", but next to him, I didn't want him to completely eclipse me, so when I wrestled Pat, Pat's a jacked dude too, but I at least have 4 inches of height on Pat, or Kevin has 3 inches of height on me, so I was like, crap, man, like I always, train and keep myself in shape, but I really just pushed the heavier lifting and trying to bulk up to wrestle Kevin so he didn't completely eclipse me. So wrestling someone that big in a one-on-one match definitely changed my training a little bit. A little less cardio, a little more heavy lifting, when you wrestle Pat Buck, you want to do your cardio, trust me. Pat Buck can go as long as he wants, man. So you wrestle a guy like Kevin Matthews, you want to make sure your strength is up, and it's a different approach to that kind of match. And same thing, actually, Pat and I ended up going 12 minutes, and Kevin and I ended up going 12 minutes. And, you know, it was crazy. I took some of the craziest bumps I ever had, man. You know, top rope power bombs and getting gorilla pressed upside down into the buckle, and that was a nut smash too. And yeah, man. And you know, Kevin ended up countering my submission finisher, the triangle choke, with like two deadlift power bombs and power bombed me onto his knees, and that was it. But then after the match, you know, he got on the mic and he really, really put me over for everybody. You know, I really don't want to repeat exactly what he said because, you know, it kind of ruins it. But I'll send you the YouTube link to the post-match speech. It was, once again, it was pretty surreal. He got on the mic and, you know, in a nutshell, just really, really put me over for my experience level and just wrestling in general. So that was kind of like the next big pinnacle moment for me in my career so far, I'd say.
Now, from a fan, a wrestling fan, and I don't mean this in a negative way at all, it seems like this is all coming together really fast. How does it not go to your head? How do you keep a level head with all this happening to you?
Well, there's different types of people, you know what I mean? There's people that, like, no matter what they do, even if they do something crappy, they'll try to cover it up and act like it was awesome. Or I'm kind of the guy where, like, I'm kind of a perfectionist, so I'm never fully happy with anything that I do. You know what I mean? So, like,
right.
Like I'm happy with everything that I do, but, like, I don't know if you guys ever read interviews where, like, CM Punk, where he's like, oh, I can't watch my own matches because I just cringe. And everyone, you know, is CM Punk, you're the best, you know what I mean? And he feels like he's the best, but he can't watch himself wrestle. Now, I'm not necessarily like that, but, you know, a lot of people always say to me, like, I'll watch my matches with the other boys. We'll watch the pay-per-view after the fact. And they'll be like, oh, man, your match is great. And I'll be like, I could have done this or I could have done this. You know, I'm always looking – I feel like I look at things differently than a lot of people do. I'm always looking to improve myself. So I'm not going to be the kind of guy like, oh, I did this. I'm freaking awesome. Because I don't think I'm awesome yet. I feel very lucky to have what I have. And I want to keep building upon it and making it better and better.
Now after the match, when you won the match where you won the suicide title, when you finally had the belt in your hand, what does that feel like?
Oh, man, it was that once again, it's that moment you dream about since you're a little kid, you know what I mean? Like, like actually winning a wrestling belt and having that moment where you got the 1-2-3 and your music's playing and the crowd's cheering and the referee's handing you the belt. It's like, it's that thing you're, like I said, it's that boyhood dream, you know what I mean? So
that moment
really was just really, really crazy, man. And once again, after the match, you know, I actually ended up pinning Pat Buck to win the title. He was in this six-way, and after the match, he shook my hand and raised the title up in my hand, and once again, just like in January, left and gave me my moment, and you know, it was great. And you know, unfortunately, in the closing moments of the match, Starman hit me with a huge drop kick and ended up knocking himself completely out. So my victory wasn't a very long victory because after I stood up on the ropes and, you know, raised my belt for the first few times, I went to put my belt on, and the referee's like, hey, man, Starman's really hurt. And I look on the outside, and everyone's surrounding Starman, and he was unconscious, and they said he was, like, foaming from the mouth and stuff. I'm like, oh, man, you know, luckily he woke up, you know, because we were worried for a minute, but he woke up, and he ended up being fine. He had a concussion, but he actually just returned, you know, a month later this past Saturday. But it's kind of creepy when you watch PWS Talk Up the Fans actually posted that whole pay-per-view up on YouTube. So you guys can watch the PWS Return to Rahway full show on YouTube where I win the belt and that match and everything.
Hey.
But and you see on the video, Starman hits me the drop kick and hits his head on the floor, and he starts, like, violently convulsing. It's, like, really, really scary to watch.
Whoa.
Send me both those links, the Kevin Matthews thing and the last show.
Absolutely.
Yeah, please. I kind of cut you off there. I'm sorry. Go, continue your point.
Yeah, the man is talking to
you. I know. I felt like a jerk.
No, it's okay. It's a discussion. But, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much, You asked what the moment was like, right? That was the question?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's pretty much it. I mean, I was worried about Starman once I realized. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, to clarify, Cecil, when did it sink in? I mean, obviously the mind was on Starman, but when did it sink in, like, oh, my God, I did it. I have a I'm a champion.
I mean, aside from the, you know, the moment in the ring, once I got backstage and, you know, the company photographer pulls you aside, and I don't know if you guys know, you know, the site WrestlingFigs.com, they sell all the wrestling action figures
yeah.
and tickets and all
yeah,
that kind
yeah.
of stuff. The PWS photographer, Bob Mulren, he posts all, or Bob Mulren, excuse me, he posts all the pictures on WrestlingFigs.com. I kept trying to say ProWrestlingSyndicate.com. He does that too, but he posts them all on WrestlingFigs.com, and he was taking the PWS highlight pictures for Wrestling Figs. And that's one of the, you know, moments too, like after the ring, where you kind of realize, like, man, I'm one of the champions of the company, where the photographer's pulling you aside, like, all right, we got to do a photo shoot for WrestlingFigs.com. And then later in the night, Bonesaw ended up winning the PWS title. And then I get pulled over for a second photo shoot so they can get a photo shoot with both new champions. And that's when you're like, you know, this is nuts. And, you know, you kind of just go from this guy, you know, who's been training like a year and, you know, within a month it's like, you know, photo shoots for the company and, you know, ordering and selling merchandise and all that kind of stuff. And this is like the fourth or fifth podcast or you know, talk radio kind of thing I've done since I won the belt, you know, so it's been like
nice.
media and merchandise and photos and all that kind of stuff, and it's, you know.
Well, who was the first, damn it? Who was the first podcast that got on the Craven Vero train?
Oh, it was you guys, man, way ahead.
There you go.
Way ahead of everyone else, man.
There you
almost
go,
a full year,
it.
Almost a full year ahead of everyone else.
That's right. Now, get back to your point. I'm sorry. Had to get that out there.
Stop cutting him off.
No, and not to sound like, you know, I'm just saying, like, not to sound like, you know, I'm freaking John Cena or anything. That's not what I'm trying to sound like at all. I'm saying I didn't really have any of that kind of stuff before then. The most I would do is you know, the few times I did the podcast with you guys. So it was like, but you know, that was really it. And you know, now I just came out with my first T-shirt to have the belt on it, and it's just, I feel like an independent wrestler now is what I guess I'm trying to say. I've been, you know, training and building up, and really the past month I finally feel like just a straight-up independent pro wrestler.
How is the popularity level? I mean, are you over in PWS? Are you one of the guys that people are buying tickets for? Does it feel that way? Can you tell?
I don't know about that. I mean, PWS is going to – like, I don't think PWS would lose any ticket sales if I were to get hurt. You know what I mean? I think they would still sell the same tickets. I don't think I'm putting butts in seats, but I think people are starting to notice who I am, and my merchandise sold very well. My first T-shirts, I had them on sale. I ordered 42 of them, sold them at $20, and I have five left. So
wow.
I mean, you can do the math. You can do the math, 20 times, you know, whatever. my merchandise did really, really well. So that was a nice shock. It was the first, you know, real money I've ever really made in wrestling. Yeah, I mean, it's like I was saying. I don't think that I'm putting butts in seats, but I think people are starting to notice me, and you know, I feel like I'm getting decently popular. I mean, I don't want to say, like, oh, I'm over, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But, you know, you can watch the videos of PWS events and judge for yourself, but I definitely have people who know who I am, and, you know, I at least get a reaction when I come out now as opposed to no one knowing who I am, so, you know, people know who I am now.
Yeah, that's really, you know what? You know what? I think we should start the campaign. I think maybe since we were the first podcast to get you on and all that kind of thing, we're going to start the campaign with Pro Wrestling Illustrated for Rookie of the Year.
Oh,
Craven
yeah.
Vero, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, Rookie of the Year. I think we got to get the grassroots campaign started on this right now, Dan.
Let's do it. I'm behind that.
You're the secretary of this club.
All right.
No girl.
Can you imagine?
I have to read the minutes every month.
Exactly, and no girls allowed. No girls allowed.
All right, I'll take that.
They complicate things.
Yes, they do.
Now, let's talk about the event that happened this past Saturday. What went down there? Tell me, from your perspective, what happened there? Or did we already cover that? My mind's kind of blown tonight. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I actually have the flu, so I'm sorry if I don't see myself. I'm actually...
Every time I talk to you, you got the damn flu. What's wrong with you? Your immune system shit.
Well, it's actually funny. No. Last time I was on, I actually just posted on Facebook that I haven't been this sick since last winter. You had me on in December. I had walking pneumonia in December. Yeah. So, yeah, last time you guys had me on, I had walking pneumonia, and I haven't been sick since then. You know, it was almost a year, it's 10 months. And I just have the flu real bad this week. I felt myself starting to get sick at the event this weekend, actually, but it was just kind of my throat. But I was like, all right, let me just try not to cough during this match, and I could be as sick as I want tomorrow, you know. But then it kind of got worse and worse, where I feel like absolute dog crap this week. But, you know, it's whatever. I'm taking my Theraflu.
You know, it's like the curse of King Tut's tomb. It's the curse of coming on Hell in a Cell. You got to stop.
It's
going to be another year
every time I schedule a Hell in a Cell appearance, I start coughing my lungs out.
That's terrible.
That's terrible.
But actually, because we did cover what happened at the last show, let's talk about Saturday, November 16th. The Insane Clown Posse. You got Vader. You got the BW. What's going on with Pro Wrestling Syndicate November 16th?
November 16th, that's going to be PWS Wrestle Bowl. It's going to be our third event back in Rahway. Now, we're not back in the Rahway Rec Center yet, but it's the same parking lot and everything. It's the Soccer Dome connected to it. Not connected to it, but they share a parking lot. They share land. You get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So it's a cool venue. It's got really good acoustics. It's definitely, you know, being a musician, that's something I appreciate in the venue. That's going to be our third event back there. Being back in Rahway has definitely been great for everything. You know, it's easier for fans from New York to get there, all kinds of stuff, a little closer. And it's great to be back in Rahway, and hopefully we'll be back in the rec center soon. But right now we're at the Soccer Dome next door. I'm trying to think what it's called.
The Center Circle Soccer Dome.
Yeah. I kept wanting to say squared circle, but I knew that wasn't it because the wrestling ring is squared circle. Yeah, it's Center Circle. Center Circle in Rahway, New Jersey, right.
I was just going to give the address. It's 1225 Main Street in Rahway, New Jersey. But go ahead.
Right. At the last event this past Saturday, Bonesaw defended the PWS Championship against Just Incredible. And that match was, if Just Incredible won, he was going to be defending the title against Vader at the next show. Bonesaw retained, so Vader versus Just Incredible is one of the attraction matches. Kevin Matthews and Devin Moore, Reality Check, they've been feuding with Alex and Kyle Reynolds, the Reynolds brothers, and they've had the mysterious Arkham coming and attacking Kevin Matthews every match they've had the past few months, so... this show is going to be Reality Check's Devin Moore and Kevin Matthews teaming up with the PWS champion Bonesaw against the Reynolds brothers and Arkham. The BWO is going to be there, and they're going to be wrestling the Untouchables. The Southside Player Club broke up last month, or not last month, for this pay-per-view be last month, but this past Saturday. They're going to be having a one-on-one match, so it's the big deal, Craig Steele against Hollywood Joe Hardway. We have Starman against Thin Moth, and I am not sure who I'm defending my championship against yet. I know that announced is Shane Hurricane Helms, Mario Baccara, the lifeguard, Drunken Swashbuckler. The tag team champions, the Heavenly Bodies, will be there. But I do not know who I'm defending my belt against, so I am anxiously waiting for that announcement.
Okay, so that keep your eyes peeled on ProWrestlingSyndicate.com for that information. Now, another question I have, it's kind of a two-parter. The first part is your education at the school. What had to be amazing, you had, of course, Sammy Callahan, who is now Solomon Crowe down in developmental for WWE. You were trained by Rich Swann. Pat Buck, obviously, a lot of different things. What was that education like for you as a student breaking in to the business?
I can't imagine training anywhere else. Like, I know people that have gone to other schools and switch over to the PWS school. I've visited other schools. I've seen other schools, and, you know, there's a ton of schools closer to me. You know, I drive almost 70 miles up to Metuchen as often as I can to train. You know, it's an hour and a half there, hour and a half home. You know, it's about a three-hour round trip, you know, and school runs 3 days a week. So, you know, that's I can't imagine going anywhere else, man. I mean, Pat is always there. Pat's school, it's Pat's ring, Pat's the head instructor. And, you know, like I said, Pat was an OVW. Pat was former OVW Tag Team Champions with Rob Conway. Like, Pat knows everything about how that side of the business is run. You know, he's co-owner of PWS. You know, Pat is just, like, this wealth of knowledge in the ring, out of the ring, everything. He's met everybody. He's heard every opinion, you know. And then we have our other trainers, you know, obviously Kevin Matthews is there, Mario Bacara, Justin Carino from the Heavenly Bodies, Dan Moff, some of the former trainers, Sammy Callahan, Rich Swan, Jay Lethal. We'll occasionally have Kurt Hawkins pop in from time to time because him and Pat are good friends. Yeah, I mean, there's not really any other school you go to where there could be current roster WWE guys popping in to say what's up. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah, really.
And train with you in the ring. You know, like, I've ran spots with Kurt Hawkins. You couldn't say that at any other school, you know? It's just incredible, man, and you get an angle from everybody, you know, like, I was actually just thinking about this the other day, like, where I feel like my style comes from, and I feel like, you know, I have, like, a combination of the, you know, current mainstream wrestling, you know, televised wrestling style, a little bit of Japanese strong style, a little bit of lucha, and I know I get that, you know, pay-per-view match quality kind of training from Pat Buck. And I know that strong style stuff mostly comes from Sammy, and I know that lucha stuff mostly comes from Swan. You know what I mean? Just being able to pick brains of people that just cover the entire spectrum of wrestling. But
yeah,
Pat Buck just knows how to put together a perfect match, man. Like, that's really just, I mean, you know, there's places that teach you the moves. There's even some places good enough to teach you how to use the moves. But Pat teaches you the moves, how to use the moves, when to use the moves. And it's not just the moves. It's everything. It's your facials. It's how you move. It's what you should and shouldn't be doing. And Pat just knows how to put together that quality match. I really can't think of any other wrestling school. I mean, obviously Lance Storm's wrestling school is one of the best in the world. And some of the schools in Japan, you know, they're big company dojos. But most wrestling schools you go to in America, they're not going to really teach you how to have a good match. And that's the one really key thing I feel like Pat does for his students that a lot of places don't do. You know, they're going to teach you how to, most people train for 3 months and they leave a school. Like, okay, I know how to hit the ropes and do a hip toss and body slam. All right, I'm going to start taking bookings. You know, like, most of the guys here at the PWS school, man, we're addicted to the training, man. Like, the average wrestling training is 3 months. I've been training almost a year and a half now at the PWS school.
Yeah.
But you don't want to leave because you just get better and better, and you see yourself having better and better matches. And it really is the most valuable information you can have as a wrestler, is knowing. You can do all the coolest stuff in the world, but if you don't know how to put together a good match, no one's ever going to take you seriously. There's a million wrestlers like that. You know, there are people called, most of those guys, like spot monkeys and that kind of stuff, guys that just throw all the crap at the wall and hope it sticks. You know, you're not going to learn that at PWS. You're going to learn how to have a good match. And that's rare, very, very, very rare for a wrestling school.
Yeah, no, I get you. Thank you for that. My second part of the question is, you're most independents out there not really CZW because they have bigger names come in, but most independents, and I'm talking the smaller scale shows, things of that nature. You're just sharing a locker room kind of with, it's kind of like a softball league in a way, you know, a weekend
right.
softball league. You kind of get together and, you know, you're sharing a beer in the back, and it's kind of looked at as fun. But at PWS, you have Vader walking around in the back. You have the BWO in the back. You have Insane Clown Posse coming walking around. You have Gold Dust. What is that experience like for you?
And do they have a beer with you?
Like Jerry Lynn, for example. I can remember at that show, Jerry Lynn is taking the time out talking to you, that sort of – I mean, that has to be invaluable as well, and you don't get that anyplace else at any other schools.
Right, man. Like, PWS isn't really like – when you think of independent wrestling, like, obviously it's an independent wrestling company, but it really is kind of its own type of entity, man. It's like – it's like a combination of, like a wrestling convention and a big indie show. You know what I mean? Like, our last show, we had Sergeant Slaughter and Lita there. And Ooh. Pat actually wrestled Sergeant Slaughter dressed as Cobra Commander.
Yeah.
Like, it was, the crowd went insane. And Sergeant's great, man. Like he looked older and everything, but the way he moved and everything, Sarge, in the ring, he looked good, man. Like,
really?
You know, and having Lita backstage, like you were saying, like most of the time you're backstage at an indie show, it's you and your friends and everything. And you're at PWS, and you look over and it's like, oh man, there's Lita. I had her posters on my wall since I was 10. You know what I mean? It's like, and then, like you said, Vader. I mean, I actually remember the first time I met Vader. It was my second show in PWS. Our debut was in September. Last September in the Battle Royal, and in October they did the students' elimination tag, you know, Survivor Series style match. And
yeah.
Vader was at that show, and he did like a thing with Rikishi on the show. And I just remember, you know, Vader already did his thing, and he comes in the back, and I pull over the crash mat because I had to do two shooting star presses in that match. It was, you know, it was only my second match. My first match is not a Battle Royal. So I'm like, all right, let me do some shooting stars on this crash pad, make sure I got it down. I knew I had it down. I mean, it was a show. I'm nervous. You know, I just want to get the muscles loose, the shooting star muscles loose, whatever muscles those are. And so I start practicing my little shooting star on the crash pad. And I look over, and Vader's just sitting in a chair staring at me. And what's scary about it is he's in nothing but tighty-whitey socks and the mask.
I guess
he was wearing tighty whiteys under his ring gear, and I guess he came to the back, took his boots off, and took the long singlet off, but hadn't put any clothes on yet and hadn't taken the mask off yet. So he's just sitting there in tighty whiteys in the mask.
It's just that you're so dreamy.
What?
It's that you're so dreamy.
Oh, man, it was like, I didn't know what to think. I'm like, am I offending Vader by doing this shooting star press? Is he impressed? Is he going to come over here and say something to me? Like, I kind of just put the crash pad back and kind of, like, walked away. Like, all right, I got it. Like, I don't know why Vader – when Vader's sitting in a little chair, he still kind of looks like he's squatting. He looks like a bear rubbing his back up against a tree. You know what I mean? I'm like, at least I know I can run faster than you.
Oh, Craven.
Well, did he ever come up to you and say anything?
Yeah, that was just kind of like a weird isolated incident. He's been at PWS a few times. When I saw him at WrestleMania weekend, went up and shook his hand. He was like, oh, hey, what's up, kid? Nice to meet you. Yeah, I don't even think he remembered me, you know what I mean? So, like, you know, he comes into PWS, and I don't think he remembers that at all. You know, maybe... why would he? You know what I mean? Like, I probably blew way out of proportion. He was probably just sitting there like, oh, this kid's doing spy flying stuff. I'm going to watch him. Where I'm like, oh, Vader in his underwear and mask. He's creeping on me. What's going on here? You know what I mean? Like, I was probably much more intimidated than I had to be.
Hey, kid, you know what time it is?
Right. I don't even think he remembers that. But, no, he's actually, like, a really polite, nice guy. So, But yeah, man, it's Demolition's been through there. We had Mr. Belding from Saved by the Bell before. Howard Finkel was at the last event. It was cool meeting him. You know, we knew Jack had his retirement there, and we had John Morrison. PWS is like that one place where what they try to do is a little bit of everything. You know what I mean? And being on the PWS roster, it's just best to know your place. You know what I mean? Because there's the legends that they're going to bring in, and then there's the big names that are still currently active that they're going to bring in, like Matt Hardy or Justin Credible, Stevie Richards, you know, someone like that. John Morrison, Elijah Burke, Sanjay Dutt, Colt Cabana. There's like that wave of guys. You know, David Hart Smith. And then there's the big indie guys like Davey Richards and Kevin Steen, guys like that that we bring in. And then there's the what they consider the future. You know what I mean? So it's like the past, the present, the indie present, and the future, which is the students. And you just kind of got to find somewhere to fit in. And where I happen to fit in is like the, you know, the wrestling. Like Pat likes some comedy stuff on the show. And Eric, obviously, they like some comedy stuff on the show. They like some wrestling on the show. And that's where the six-way comes in. You know, give them that indie style, you know, X Division type match. You know what I mean? And then there's something for everybody on the show. So being a student, you just got to figure out where you fit best. And, you know, there's a lot of guys that do, you know, like gimmicks, and that works, you know, because they get themselves over through, you know, big characters. And, you know, some guys are just going to go and be like hard heels. Like there's a few students that form the heel stable now, and that's going to be their niche. So, you know, coming up in that environment with so many, you know, it's not like they have so many big names. I mean, PWS, we run shows all the time just with our core roster. The big names are always extras. But you got to make sure you stand out on those shows amongst whatever big names are on that show, you know?
Yeah, definitely. But Craven, I do want to thank you. Where can the people find you, follow your career in social media if you have a website set up? I think you do have a website set up. I think some fans actually put one together for you.
Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised with a fan site not too long ago. That's craven-varro.com, and the webmaster, this girl Candace, really nice girl, actually updates it frequently, and I definitely dig the site. There's some really cool artwork I like in there, so I definitely encourage everyone to check out the site. Thank you, Candace. On Twitter, you can follow me at MetalGodPWS. You can go to Pro Wrestling Syndicate on Facebook. You guys know, you know what I hate when what people I've noticed on like podcasts and radio shows, people give their like Facebook address, like facebook.com/blah blah blah. Dude, people know how to work Facebook, man. Just tell them your name and they'll search you. You know what I mean? Like, I always think that, like, oh, okay, I don't know why you're giving me your Facebook address. I'm just going to type your name into the search bar and you're going to come up. Like,
well, so, for me, the reason I do it, let me explain myself. The reason I do it is
because... There could be about 12 Dean Dixons.
Yes.
That
There's
makes
only
sense.
One
I'm talking
Craven
about,
Vero.
No, right, I'm talking about wrestlers. I've heard some guys with some elaborate gimmicks. I don't want to say anybody, but I'll make up a gimmick and you get the gist of it. Or like, oh, you can follow me at facebook.com/intimatewarrior. Dude, just say your name's the Intimate Warrior. They're going to type in the Intimate Warrior on Facebook and they're going to find you. You're a wrestler. I just made up some crap off the top of my head.
That was good.
I love that. I'd love to see his ring entrance.
It was the calmer
was
Ultimate
Warrior. It was this old joke gimmick I had for, like, when I was, like, a little kid and, like, me and my friends would wrestle. I had this gimmick that was, like, a combination between the Ultimate Warrior and Goldust. It was the Intimate Warrior.
Okay. I love it.
And,
I love it.
Right. You come to the ring the same way as the Ultimate Warrior. It's basically a really gay Ultimate Warrior. It was a comedy gimmick. It's basically what it is. And it would always be, I always thought it would be funny if I did it because it would be like a really skinny, gay Ultimate Warrior. But that's neither here nor there. You get my point. Like some of these guys are elaborate. Right. Some of these guys have elaborate gimmick names, like given their Facebook address. Like, no, dude, they're going to search you and find you. If your name's Mike Brown, that's different, you know. But Anyway,
I'm stealing that one.
Right. Type in Craven Varro on Facebook. You'll be able to find me. Pro Wrestling Syndicate for all your updates. As Dean said earlier, we're running again on November 16th. That's at the Center Circle Soccer Dome. That's 1225 Main Street in Rahway, New Jersey. Autograph signing is 6 o'clock. Live wrestling at 8 p.m. And that is where you can see me have my next PWS Suicidal Six-Way title defense and much, much more.
That's right. I can't wait. I got to get back up there because it really is a it's really an adventure. You never know who's going to be there. The Insane Clown Posse, for God's sakes. Just a lot going on. The night I was there, the lead singer of Smashing Pumpkins is walking around. Insane.
Yeah, yeah. Like you said, you never know who's going to pop up at PWS. It was, you know, as a metal musician myself, it was pretty crazy. You know, Billy Corgan's not really a metal musician, but you get what I'm saying. I still love the Pumpkins, dark music, half of it. I always liked the Pumpkins growing up, so it was great meeting Billy Corgan. And yeah, that's PWS for you, man. And like you said, the next show on November 16th, we got the BWO, Insane Clown Posse, Vader, Hurricane Helms. And speaking of Hurricane Helms, like I said, I don't know who I'm defending the belt against yet, but I know that he's announced for the show. So that's kind of one of those moments where you're like, I'd like Hurricane Helms to be in the match, but then it's like, he just may take my title if he is. You know what
that's
I mean?
True.
So it's like,
Well,
which way do I want this to go?
Yeah, definitely good luck, sir. You have a lot going on. I won't make it so long next time to get you back on, that's for sure. But thanks for coming on, and just find them on social media, people. But thank you.
Absolutely.
Again.
Hey, well, thank you for having me, guys. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, it always is. I enjoyed the stories, and I'll forever have the image of Vader in his tighty-whities staring at you, forever burned in my retinas. Thank you for that.
You're welcome for that. Someone needs to bear that burden with me.
You have a good night, man.
Yeah!
Well, that was Craven Varro, the PWS Pro Wrestling Syndicate Suicidal Six-Way Champion. Dan, it felt good to talk to Craven after all this time.
Yeah, I met him backstage with the New Moon shows. Good guy. I'm actually happy for him. And sitting there talking to him, he just seems like a guy who just wants to do as good as he can, and it's nice to know that it's happening. And like I said, so fast for him, man.
It really is, but I think he has a good head on his shoulder, and he certainly had some of the best trainers in the business. So,
yeah.
I mean, Rich Swann, Solomon Crowe on a Monday.
It's Sammy Callahan.
Well, whatever.
Whatever.
Hey, Solomon Omega, are you still there with us, hanging out?
I am still here.
Well, are you indeed ready, my friend?
I am so ready.
Well, we had a fight night, Omega, over the weekend, coming from Phones for You Arena in Manchester, United Kingdom.
Such a catchy name.
Isn't it Phones for You Arena? I wonder how much they paid for that. Probably a pretty penny, quite.
I imagine it takes a chunk of change to get a building named after you.
Yeah. Now, Omega, I'll be quite honest. I don't have Fox Sports 2. I'm pretty upset about it. Don't have it. So I could only see the highlights, and I know some big things happened, like in the women's bantamweight, Jessica Andrade. She picked up the win over Rosie Sexton.
Over Rosie Sexton. That's one fight I didn't get to see because it wasn't on the main card. And then, quite frankly, I only got to see this card in the last, 6 hours or so.
Fresh on your mind, then.
Fresh on my mind. But, yeah, from all accounts, it was pretty one-sided beating by Jessica Andrade.
That's what it looks like. 30-26 twice.
Yeah, I think that's – I mean – she, I think, is probably a natural 125er, but I think Rosie Sexton is as well. Good for her. I mean, she picks up a win against a veteran like Rosie Sexton. It sounds to me like the concern for Rosie Sexton was probably a bit overstated. She seems fine. She says herself she was fine. Of course, we've had these discussions with the new fighters. Do we have to keep fighters from themselves? I don't know. I'm going to trust that the fighter could fight. It sounded like Rosie was at least fighting back up all the way to the third round. So I don't get that. But good win for Jessica coming off the loss to Liz Carmouche.
Yes, indeed. Now let's talk about the main card. Is there anything else of note on the prelims?
They had some decent, I didn't get to see any of them. Only the ones during the card itself. The one I'm thinking of, I don't have it in front of me.
Cole Miller.
No, it was forget it. I'm going to hate myself for doing this. He celebrated one of the guys who was winning. He celebrated twice, like he won.
Okay.
And then, but he didn't win. he had not won. He raised his hand like he was winning, and the guy was still there. Ref hadn't stopped the fight. We got done talking about this last week, and you fight until the ref pulls you off. This wasn't even close. It was just funny. I just like, dude, you need to pick it up. And wait until you actually get the win before you do that.
Confident in his skills. You ever think
this was Luke Barnott versus Andrew Craig? Yes, finally got it.
Okay.
Jeez. Okay. Sorry, that took me a while. It was Barnott who was just waiting. He just he hurt Craig with punches and stopped. And hesitated and let Craig get back in it. He could have ended it in the first round. He still ended up getting the win via rear naked choke, but it was just kind of silly, in my view.
I gotcha. Now, in the co-main event, I know I'm skipping ahead. Is there anything before we get to the semi or the main that you think is worth talking about? I'm just looking at the names, and I don't see anything really.
Oh, well, I did find the Musoke Sakara fight to be interesting in that.
Well, Sakara was a heavy favorite.
Sakara was a heavy favorite, and Sakara was winning, was landing the better strikes, was on top of Musoke, and drops an elbow, and Musoke, just as he drops the elbow, it lands flush on Musoke, but he turns it into an armbar, basically flips Sakara over and gets the tap. It looked really good. Really impressive armbar. It was from the bottom too, and it was just an immediate tap out. So you could tell it was in deep. It was a great show of grappling.
Well, and see, that's the thing. I think that's what makes MMA such an enjoyable sport, is that in the flash of an eye, literally, you have to pay attention every moment. I think a lot of people that call it boring, a lot of people that say, "Oh, it's a slow sport," whatever, they just don't understand the grappling game.
Yeah, they don't get it when a guy's fighting for position, improving his position. It's like any other sport. There's slow fights. There's bad fights. There's slow games. There's bad games.
Yeah.
It's like any other sport. Not every fight is
is a classic.
Well, do you think that perhaps the fact that it's two men battling in there, do you think that has something, because it's not really, I mean, normal in quotation marks, normal behavior for somebody to want to do this for a living. Do you think that's why it's so much easier to make fun of it, or maybe the fact that it's so closely mixed, even though it really isn't, with professional wrestling?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's partially it's because of the violence of the sport. I mean, that to your point, it's inherently trying to hurt someone. Even though you can make that translation and say, like, well, football is the most popular sport in the nation, and they're hurting each other left and right. But
they're not locked in a cage like animals. This is what people would say.
Yeah, they're not literally fighting. They're playing a game, and they're tackling and stuff like that, but they're not punching each other. They're not grabbing an arm and trying to break it. I understand that viewpoint. At the same time, I also understand it's a competitive sport. I understand there are rules. I understand there are weight classes. It's not but it's like anything else. Not everybody's going to like it, and not everybody can be expected to like it. So
I'm just waiting for the day that small joint manipulation, that rule, is out of the rule book. I can't wait for that. I'm kidding, of course. But anyway, let's talk about the semi-main event. There was a little bit of controversy in this. Declared a no contest, Pearson Gallard. Apparently there was some type of illegal strike. Explain.
It was in the second minute of round one. Basically what happened was Pearson went in with a flying knee. And he landed it, but then they kind of went to the ground after that, you know.
Yeah.
And so Pearson's up against the fence, and as they're both getting up at this point, and Gallard throws a knee, and okay. it's very close. The first there's two knees that's going to happen, because it's basically one two in rapid succession.
Yes.
The first one is just as Pearson's getting up, and this one connects to the top of Pearson's head. It looks close, like it could be an illegal knee, but in replays, it looks like that Pearson is up. He has his hand. He has 2 feet on the ground. Neither knee is down, and his hand is up. So he gets hit by that, and immediately, kind of, he stumbles a little bit. But Gallard is going for the second knee right off. The second knee comes out, and it basically hits Pearson square in the face, cuts him open wide in the front of the forehead. Now, on the replays, what you're trying to figure out is it an illegal knee? And it's very close. Basically, as it looks to me like as Gallard starts the motion for the second knee, Pearson managed to get his hand down. I'm not sure if he actually intentionally did it or he's just stumbling from getting hit with the first knee. But at that point, his hand was down. The hand was clearly down on the mat before the second knee strikes.
But you're talking second. I mean milliseconds.
You're talking milliseconds. But in any case, the ref stopped the fight for an illegal knee. He called the knee illegal.
Jesus.
And So they stop the fight. You assume they're going to do one of two things. You assume they're going to stop the fight. They're probably going to take a point away from Gallard, and everything's fine, except this cut is huge. And, I mean, this cut is probably 2-3 inches long.
So it's a mangina on his forehead.
Yeah. I mean, it's not as gaping as the one on Diego Sanchez, because they probably hadn't gone too far, but it was long, and you could see it was just going to be a big – it would have been a big deal. I'm surprised they stopped it, because – it was bleeding, but it wasn't bleeding that bad yet.
Yeah.
And it was bleeding down the bridge of the nose, but they stopped it. And probably, in all fairness, it probably would have bled everywhere.
Well, once you start tapping it, and I'm sure Gallard would have.
Yeah. So it was neat, but the real controversy was legal knee or not. And it's really that gray area. When does it become a legal knee? Does it become a legal knee when you throw it, when you start the motion, or is it becoming a legal knee when it lands?
Well, we're talking judgment calls, though. I mean,
We're absolutely
it's so subjective, as we've said so many times with Bill Bookwater, and so that's really a shame for both individuals, quite frankly, that happened.
Well, I mean, and in both, and it goes as a no contest. So you know,
it's like it never happened.
It's like it might as well have never happened, because it's, I mean, it only lasted 2 minutes.
So 8 weeks in training camp, and that's what happens when you
main event. And it when there wasn't anyone to, it didn't really appear to be anyone. It, because it didn't go to the judges, there was no decision. But there, at the time, there didn't seem to be a clear favorite in the round yet.
Well, that soon, you're talking 157 in the first. Nobody really by that time usually has. You're still in the feeling out processes usually, but somebody who, in 3-10 of the first round, figured everything out was in his debut at middleweight, Lyoto Machida, looking like the killer that we knew he was but hasn't been. Here's the man. He's knocked out Couture. He's won the light heavyweight title. He looked like a killer, knocking out Mark Munoz with a devastating head kick, and we were talking about this off air.
Yeah, I mean, this was just a straight left head kick that was perfectly placed. The thing was, Munoz got his hand up, puts his hand up to block, and still got knocked out by it. The knee, it didn't even look to me like it hit very flush, but it looked like he almost knocked it, basically the kick almost had Munoz knocking himself out with his own hand. It doesn't really matter how it looked. In reality, Lyoto Machida just knocked his head off and you finished the fight with ease. I don't even know if he broke a sweat.
Yeah. Everybody's been saying how sportsmanlike he was, because he could have went in for a few more shots before the fight was called, but he stopped himself. They're good friends outside of the cage.
They are. I mean, and this gets into, you know, we talked about earlier just today, you know, you fight till the ref pulls you off. You know, I think it was clear that the ref was going to end this fight. I mean, it was clear Munoz was out. I think it looked like Machida was heading in. I don't think he was like running in too fast to finish it. But I think he saw the ref and stopped. I can't say that for certain, but that's what I think.
He was kind of looking up at him. He was like, you know, I can kill the guy right now if you want me to.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's a veteran move. I mean, I think he knew he didn't need to do any more damage. So he was just hoping the ref was coming in. But if he wasn't going to, then he was gonna have to keep it.
Oh sure.
Munoz down. So I think he would have done that. But I think it's just a heads up move by Machida. It's sportsmanship certainly, but I think it's also a heads up move from him. I think it's just situational awareness.
Oh, certainly. Because we've seen Machida, you know, get vicious before. So I'm sure. But I think the friendship thing, and I think the fact, you know, that we always talk about ring positioning for professional wrestling, good cage positioning. He just knew where the ref was, that the fight was going to stop. And if not, he would have made sure of it. So where's Machida go from here very quickly? He looked really good.
Yeah, he does look good. You know, I think we've talked about Vitor Belfort potentially.
Well,
as a matchup,
Belfort has to get past the mighty Dan Henderson.
The mighty Dan Henderson, yes. You know, the thing is, I mean, Machida, as good as he looked at light heavyweight, as good as he looked at light heavyweight, but going down to middleweight, he looks really good. He should stay there. I mean, he should have been there from day one, completely frankly. But hey, I mean, I don't know. He said the weight cut was hard. Can he continue to make the weight cut? We'll see. I mean, he's a pretty disciplined guy. He looked really good. I mean, he was leaned out, certainly, but he looked real good. Didn't look sunk in, didn't look tired at all.
Well, he didn't really have he didn't have to.
He's an immediate factor at middleweight, but middleweight still has to kind of be sorted out between Weidman and Silva. So there's a, you know, a decent chance here that he's going to be looking for another fight here in a short order. And, you know, I think, you know, who knows for where he wants to go. But I said, you know, like, if Belfour is available, I think that's his best option. I mean, that's what Machida has said is his best option. You know, and that makes sense. I think Machida is going to win that fight. But, you know, I think that's I think it's very interesting to see, even if it's not Vitor. I mean, I think he's just got to stay with it. If he wins one more time, I think he gets either Wyman or Silva.
I got you.
One or the other.
I like it. Now, we also, next week, there's going to be a fight for the troops. It's headlined by Tim Kennedy taking on Natal. We also have Liz Carmouche taking on Alexis Davis. Besides that, I don't really see much else. There's a few Russians on there that I think will be doing pretty good. We also have George Roop at Bantamweight. So some things going on there. Let's talk about the top two there, Kennedy and Natal. Is Kennedy just in the main event because he's a former Marine?
Yes. Wait. I mean, you got Marine, former Marines in the top two fights here. You got Tim Kennedy and Liz Carmouche. Yes, I mean, let's get me wrong. I mean, Kennedy is not a main event fighter. Neither is Natal. It's a fight night for the troops. Sure. You know, this was Brian Stann's place in the UFC before he retired. So now it's Tim Kennedy's. You know, this is I like Kennedy's fighter. He's well-rounded. He has some decent skills. He's, you know, he hasn't beat anybody of huge note. I mean, he lost to Jacare, lost to Luke Rockhold. His you know, he was really good in Strikeforce, but his only big win in my mind is Robbie Lawler. You know, and that was 3 years ago, or 2 years ago. Yeah, but I think he's fine as a middle of the road fighter. I just don't, you know, is he going to go anywhere overall, I don't know. I kind of doubt it. You know, if you look at Natal, there's another guy who's kind of middle of the road as well.
Well, who do you got now?
I mean, I think Kennedy. I'm going to pick Kennedy because I think, you know, he's going to come. He's going to be motivated to win that.
Yeah.
He's going to be motivated to win for the troops. You know, as I said, he's got good all-around skills. He should be able to avoid a submission from Natal or and he's durable enough to win the stand up. So,
and how about Carmouche?
This is an interesting fight for Carmouche. Alexis Davis had a really, really good fight with Sarah Kaufman, and you know, she's got wins over top talent. She's got a win over Amanda Nunes. She's got a win over Shayna Baszler, beat Rosie Sexton, Julie Kedzie, Tanya Avenger. She's fought a lot of really good fighters. Liz Carmouche is strong. I think if anything, we've seen in her last two fights, even the one with Rousey, that she's just a tough, strong fighter.
Very close to beating Rousey, the only person who's had her in that much trouble.
Yeah, and you know, she's not going to fall easily. I think Carmouche is really coming into her own right now. I think she's starting to peak as a fighter,
mm-hmm.
and I think she's got the momentum to keep this up. You know,
I think besides Tate, I think the UFC, obviously their marketing is Tate and Rousey. Those are the two, because Tate's cute and like that girl next door type of way. Rousey's like that strong, independent woman that's a good face for MMA. They're both beautiful. But then if there's an heir apparent out there, you have to say Carmouche.
Right now you would. You know, if Rousey goes off to do movies, let's say.
Yeah.
You got to wonder if Carmouche isn't up for another title shot if she keeps winning. There's others in the way. I mean, Sarah Kaufman holds a win over Liz Carmouche.
Two wins.
Yeah, so...
Oh, I'm sorry, one. I was looking
just at... Just one, I think.
Yeah, I was looking at another fighter. Alexis Davis has two losses to Kaufman.
Yeah, Alexis has lost twice to Kaufman, but they're both good fights, so... This is I like Carmouche as a ranked in that division. She's gonna. The question becomes: some of the newer fighters coming up, how is she gonna fire against like a Sarah McMahon, for example, who we really haven't seen in UFC yet? So we'll see where that goes. But you know, someone like Holly Holm, if she ever makes her way to the UFC, someone who's got that kind of really heavy striking. That's gonna be an interesting test. We know she can get beat. Obviously, she lost to Rousey, but she's strong and she's coming into her own. I think she's definitely one to watch. Let's put it that way.
I got you. Also, on Saturday, following Saturday, not this Saturday, we are gonna have. That's right. Dan Henderson makes his return to the Octagon against Vitor Belfort. And it's a Brazil card, so plenty of Brazilians. More Brazilians than you can shake a stick at, but
yes,
that's what happens with a Fox Sports 1 Brazilian card. I do want to move on. We kind of truncated it. We'll talk more about that next week, and we'll have real-time updates as the show goes on. We can definitely spend more time on MMA next week. Now, Dan, I know you saw Raw. Did either of you see the pay-per-view?
No, sir.
No, I didn't see the pay-per-view.
No.
Well, let's say the pay-per-view started off hot.
I mean, we did such a good job of selling it last week. I don't know why I missed it.
Well, but the pay-per-view...
It started with the tag team, right?
Yes, it started very hot. The best match of the night, that's where it peaked, my friend. Cody Rhodes and Goldust defeated The Shield, and that's, of course, Reigns and Rollins and The Usos in a very hot opener. And then immediately... you have Fandango and Summer Rae come out and take on the great Khali and Natalya. Now, I can understand, in a way, I suppose, but you have R-Truth, say what you want about R-Truth, but, and you have Dolph Ziggler up in the booth there doing that stupid sideshow that they do during pay-per-views now. Why is the great Khali on a pay-per-view? So that's my only point. I don't want to spend too much time.
Why is the great Khali still employed?
You took my answer.
that's my question. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that was my next question.
Then you have Big E Langston defeating Dean Ambrose by countout. It was 8 minutes of pure agony. Big E Langston, I don't know why you book a champion to lose by count out, but whatever, that's besides the point.
So Ambrose couldn't pull a good match out of him?
No.
That sucks.
It is what it was. I think maybe that was the purpose of the match. It just, they never gelled. And I don't know whose fault that was, Big E Langston's. Now, the first Hell in the Cell match, we talked about it last week. It was supposed to be Ryback and Heyman. Taking on CM Punk. Now, this is the blow-off, apparently. Hell in a Cell, if it's not a blow-off, I don't know what the hell else it would be. Right. But what happens is Punk comes out, then Ryback comes out, no Heyman. He comes out in one of those, you know how some places to change the light bulbs, you have that thing that can go up? Well, they come out with this, like, crane that put Heyman on top of the cage, and he spends the entire match on top of the cage. CM Punk wins.
Okay.
Yeah, CM Punk wins, climbs the cage, and hits him with a kendo stick, and apparently that's a blow-off. I don't know. Then you put Los Matadors on the card. They defeat the Real Americans. Why? I'm not sure. Cena defeated Alberto Del Rio.
Oh, God.
Looked all right. Fine match. Good
really?
For Cena. Yeah. Hey, you know... You gotta take every little bit you can on this pay-per-view. Cena looked good considering what he went through. He's a genetic freak, apparently. Still doesn't sell, but hey, you know, WWE wanted the turnaround and Cena equals ratings, so they got him back quicker. I don't know how long he can last. I mean, how old is John Cena at this point? I'm going to look it up real quick.
I'm going to say mid-30s, right?
Yeah, he's got to be mid to late 30s. And, of course, let's see. It's because I have so many things open right now.
I'm not sure.
He is 36. He is 36. I don't know how long his body can continue this. I mean, he's 36 years old. He's a year younger than me. I know some days I get out of this chair after doing this show. I can't walk. How can he, you know what I'm saying? I mean, how can he?
I don't think he's got many resets left is what I'm saying.
I certainly agree with that.
I really
don't. He did look good. He looked sharp. He went 15 minutes longer than I thought he would have lasted. And, hey, whatever. I mean, it's Cena. At this point, you can't hate the guy because he's not going anywhere. So
no, not his fault.
Yeah.
Debatable. Not his fault.
AJ Lee, the biggest surprise of the night for me was AJ Lee retaining the Divas title against Brie Bella in a five-minute masterpiece for the Divas division. And then Randy Orton defeating Daniel Bryan. I don't have enough time to explain exactly what went on because we're pressed for time right now. But let's just say Triple H got involved. He was concerned for Shawn Michaels. He gets out of the corner. He was talking to Michaels. Bryan hits Triple H with that running kick to the face. Apparently Shawn Michaels was offended by that super kick. Orton covers and Shawn Michaels does the pinfall. But I just don't get it. It didn't make sense. It was overbooked and overbearing, and it's just what WWE has turned into. So the pay-per-view, I don't believe in a star scale. I'm going to go with the flush scale. This was a five flusher because you just had to keep on flushing to get that shit down the toilet.
Yeah.
Oh, it was terrible. Not really much to take away from. I mean, when your opening match is your best match of the card, you're not booking quite right. Quite frankly. Now, granted, you want to open up the show, as we were talking to Tony tonight, you want to open up the show hot, but you don't want to kill the crowd after that.
No, I don't think, after that, I don't think the crowd was interested anymore.
Now, the follow-up the next night on Dan, what happened on Raw? Let's, first of all, something that I read about, I didn't actually see, Damian Sandow.
Oh, Damian.
What happened?
He lost.
How? What happened? That's what I'm asking, Dan. I know he lost, but what happened?
Dude, first of all, when he came out, as soon as he came out, I'm like, he's gonna lose. And Chris, you saw it?
No, I didn't see it.
Okay. I honestly didn't finish the match because I was so pissed off. The show started off with John Cena talking for like it went on for like 6 minutes.
Keep it brief.
It went on for 6 minutes. He came out. I started the match. Of course, it went right to the commercial break. And once it came back from the commercial break, I was like, it's not going to end well. So I didn't actually see the finish, and I'm glad I didn't see the finish, quite frankly. Goldust and Cody had a match against the Real Americans. It was a good match. Those are the two.
But the Real Americans won, right, or something? Or that I don't know. they have a title match coming up.
There. Yeah, it was non-title, and now they have a title shot.
Never mind. It hurts my head to think of the booking.
Kane came back.
Why? And he took off his mask. Why?
And he and Stephanie came out, and Kane said something to the effect of,
why doesn't he have a beard right now and overalls and part of the Wyatt family? Why?
I don't.
Why didn't that happen?
That's what I thought was going to happen.
Oh, my dear God.
The Wyatt family came out. That was stupid. They went after CM Punk.
Oh, God.
just trying to like set up a Survivor Series match or something.
I believe they're doing a Survivor Series thing, but I really don't. I'm like, eh.
It's so terrible.
Now, the segment I did like was between Daniel Bryan and Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels explained himself. He said, he's been my friend for years. I did what was right for my friend. You need to accept that and apologize.
That's stupid.
Oh, no. He said, you need to accept that and shake my hand and just forget it. And Daniel Bryan wouldn't shake his hand, and then HBK berated him, And Jane O'Brien grabbed his hand and put him in the crossface.
Good. No, not the crossface, the yes lock.
It's a crossface, dude.
It's not
it's a
crossface.
It's a freaking crippler crossface.
It's not. No, it's not, Dan. It's your Koji clutch, for God's sakes. But
right.
If you want to get technical, it's not a crossface. But
it's
go
modified,
ahead.
It's a modified crossface.
It's not a modified crossface.
It looks like one to me. Dude, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying that's what it looks like to me. There was a match between Big E Langston and the Usos versus the Shield. That was earth-shattering. At the end, Triple H came out and did a championship celebration for Randy Orton and had everybody stand out on the stage. And then the Big Show broke in. The Shield stopped him. And then Big E Langston and the Usos – oh, no, it was the Usos and Goldust and Cody came out, got rid of the Shield. Big Show got in the ring, started – everybody jumped out of the ring. He started saying something to Triple H about, I'm going to take you for everything you're worth, your company. You're going to pay me millions. Randy tried to hit him from behind, and then he ended up knocking him out with another weak knockout punch.
Well, there you go.
Ratings.
Sounds like a great
– Michael PSA, save us.
Yes, sounds like a great I nearly forgot. There's also this Saturday, Bellator 106. Omega, of course, Tito Ortiz fractured his head because he's old and these things happen when you sign a guy who's old and retired. So he's out of the Rampage fight. Instead, we have three title fights. We have Chandler versus Alvarez 2, Eddie Alvarez coming back to Bellator. We have King Mo. If you're a TNA fan, you know who that guy is, right?
He's taking here for
on,
like 3 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Taking
on Emmanuel Newton, and we have Curran and Strauss for the
Why?
Featherweight title. Also, well, he's actually a pretty good MMA fighter.
Too. Is he? Okay, good.
Yeah.
He was a decent MMA fighter before he tried to become a TNA.
Okay, cool. Then no problem, then.
And also, a few other fights are on that card as well. It's all on free TV now. I did listen to the press conference, the emergency press conference that they came out with that day. And let's just say Bjorn Rebney, not a happy camper, but he tried to put the best foot forward for a corporate face. Omega, your thoughts on Ortiz and Jackson being canceled?
You know, it's probably the best thing for Bellator, honestly. Because that pay-per-view would have just I can't see it selling at all.
Not to the scale that they certainly thought.
No. And how much are they going to pay Tito? And who? I mean, odds are that match would have been just a train wreck.
Oh. Terribly so.
So, you know, now granted, the Chandler Alvarez fight is interesting. It's a second after a really great fight, and you know, sometimes those are good, sometimes they're not. It's probably going to be different, but it's probably worth watching. I wouldn't pay money for it, like a pay-per-view, but as a on Spike TV with potentially getting more exposure to Bellator, I think that works out better for them.
Do you think it's going to grab the casual fan this lineup?
Well, no. I mean, grabbing the casual fan is difficult, but I think you. I think what actually happened was you're going to get more – you get more news from having canceled the pay-per-view than actually having the pay-per-view.
True.
So you may actually get more eyeballs now because it's on – I was going to have to pay for this card, but now it's free, so maybe I'll watch it.
There you go. That's a very good point. I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah.
But Rampage is set up for another fight. I forget who he's fighting.
He's fighting Joey Beltran.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yes.
Quite a week. We ran the extra special long.
Hey,
you know
it
what?
It was a good reason for it.
But you know what, Bill? This is for you. You said you wanted more content. There you go. You have an extra 45 minutes or so.
Did he really say that?
Well, yeah. He.
I like Bill.
Well, he drives all day. He needs something to listen to, and if it's us babbling about MMA for 45 minutes, a half hour, whatever, you know, I can do that. Now, next week, we are going to be joined by Legacy Fighter, and of course he was up in Canada, made some noise there. Ryan Babyface Benoit will be here next week. And I do want to say we do the following week after that, Mick Menard will be here. He is Legacy FC president, so that's going to be something else. And Damon Jackson will be here on the 20th. The 27th, that is, of course, Thanksgiving Eve, will be a best-of episode. DJ Hyde returns to talk about Cage of Death on the 4th of December. Matt Tremont will return to talk about Cage of Death coming up on the 11th. And Omega, I think this will make you happy, Bill Bookwater will join us for our MMA in Review episode on the 18th. Now, the 18th is a strategic move because all the events will be done except for UFC 168.
Oh, very clever of you.
Yes, all the events will be done. The last event before that will be UFC on Fox, and that is Pettis's fight.
He plans it, my friend.
So the week in review, and frankly, we wouldn't have had time to get anything in before the new year anyway to talk about year in review. So Bill Bookwater will be back, and we'll be talking about MMA the year in review. So that's the rest of the year, everybody. But next week, Ryan Babyface Benoit, and I might throw somebody else in there. I don't know. You never know. Omega, where can the fine people find you?
Follow me on Twitter, at Omega Squad.
Dan, how about you?
DanLaw83 and Monday nights at 9 on the Hell in a Cell Talk Radio Network. Obey the Puck. Follow us on Twitter at Obey Puck Show.
And I am, of course, the Dean of Credibility, Double D. You can find me at Folsom County. You can also check out the blog at HIACTalkRadio.com. You can also follow on Twitter at HIACTalkRadio. You can find us on Facebook, and that's right, Craven Vero, Facebook.com/HIACTalkRadio. We are also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And until when is the next show? Dan, I believe that's Obey the Puck. Until
the
next show. That's right. Until Obey the Puck on Monday, you guys have a good week.